what the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities.
Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Tuesday, June 22nd, 2021. Thank you for joining me today. Was unable to get to a show yesterday, unfortunately, so there's a lot to talk about today. However, one thing I forgot to do. See, these are little things that you guys don't get to see on the back end before I start the show. Is I always have to refresh the YouTube page to make sure that they don't uncheck, which they do every single time, the allow embedding. There it is, allow embedding. Now, for those that are watching the show on the TLAB page, we'll suddenly see it playing where it wasn't a moment ago. Sorry to have to do that with you guys on the live. But just funny how every single time we do this, I have to refresh every time and make sure it happens. You know, just the classic censorship discussions. But we're going to talk about that more today, briefly in the beginning. A couple of quick points on censorship, some people who were recently censored, some more stuff going around in that topic. But we're going to get deep into some things here today. We're going to talk about, we talked about nanotechnology, specifically being very clear about the difference between nanoparticles, nanobots, actual robot, you know, particle-sized nanobots, and the difference in the conflation of these terms and the way that one is being discussed as absolute fake news, despite the DARPA and plenty of other groups working on this stuff, totally in its own conversation, separate from vaccines, but also included in vaccines discussions-wise. We're going to go over today about nanobots specifically. Not just about, and not trying to make any claims about what's going on today, but just showing you something that's very, very real and being discussed openly in the context of vaccines like 5 years ago, or having people as right in the beginning of COVID bring up these discussions about nanobots and how it works in your body, despite the fact that the discussion is being right now dismissed as absolutely ridiculous. And how this all ties in with the Great Reset and, you know, the discussion from the UK about human augmentation and this direction that it's all being aggressively driven. But we're going to start off early in the show today with, you know, I did that kind of cheat sheet thing I did the other day, sort of a similar start today, but right out of the gate, five or six important things right in a row that are all very important to dissolving this narrative, showing you that they're continuing to, you know, they're drowning in their lies right now. And all they can do is just go fake news, anti-science, which I've been saying for a long time. We're also going to talk about one of the big claims in that early part, which is the WHO. And it's an interesting discussion. I've already seen a few people cover it. I saw this yesterday, wasn't able to get to a show, but I'm actually glad I waited because it turns out the WHO had an update on their website as of June 3rd. It looks like it was the last time it was updated. And it went all the way until yesterday, where it very clearly said that children should not be vaccinated with this COVID-19 injection or should, you don't know, we should wait. And as of yesterday to today, I went to open the page to get it set up today. And I'm like, wait a minute, the page is different. And I've even already seen some people talking about that as well. I just stumbled into it and said, am I crazy? Am I missing something? And sure enough, it's happening. But the WHO is telling you another thing that aligns with what we're saying. But they're doing the opposite of that. Aren't they supposed to not challenge what the WHO says? Exactly. You know how this goes. They've done that with lockdowns. They've done it with a lot of things. They don't care what the WHO says unless it's something we are countering, right? We're going to talk about the child part of this and how it's really obvious that they're not at risk. They're forcing this on children anyway, and there's a little bit of a nefarious agenda happening around that. We'll talk more about some insights into what's going on in the vaccine discussion, which is always sort of a usual on this show to show you the continual updates of what we're seeing that nobody's reporting on outside of the independent media, and how this is leading to mandated forced vaccination in multiple places around the world. India being an example, but we're also talking about places like Russia discussing this, the Philippines. Openly discussing this, and your governments don't care because that's exactly the direction that they're leaning in, even though they pretend like that's not what's happening. Now, let's start off with a couple of quick points that I think are very relevant to the larger discussion. This one is sort of disjointed from everything, but I just think it's important to point this out because I mean, I shouldn't even say that because personally, I actually quite Oh my God. Let me see. I just realized something, you guys. Give me 1 second. I'm going to make sure. I apologize. This is a mistake on my part here, guys. Let me check the chat real quick. Make sure that you guys can even hear me. I really hope I haven't gone 6 minutes without there being any audio. Let me see. Okay, good. Let me know in the chat, guys, if you can hear me. I know the audio. Okay, good. I hear my audio in there. I apologize about the delay, ladies and gentlemen. Let me fix my microphone really quickly. It looks like there was a problem with my connection. Let me do this really quickly. That way the audio won't be bad, as I'm sure it is right now. And we will keep going. So bear with me. This is always a impromptu sort of show anyway, so no worries there. It's just you and me here, you know, just a couple of people hanging out. Okay. Now let me make sure that is fixed. Give me 1 second. Make sure the audio here. Might as well let you guys look at me while I'm fumbling around. Let me make sure my audio is correct, and then we will keep going. Okay. Now, if you could go ahead and give me a confirmation in the chat as well, let me know that you can still hear me and that this is moving.
With me here, you know, just a couple of people hanging out.
I can listen to myself.
Okay. Now, let me make sure that is fixed. Give me 1 second.
No, I know. I see a lot of people in the chat commenting. I apologize about the delay. The audio, you'll notice the difference the moment that it starts. So trust me. So let's keep going. Let's get into this.
Keep going.
Yeah, there we go. Okay, now back to the point. Bear with me. Apologize for the mistake. Okay, back to it. All right. So going forward, now this is an important point that I feel is very relevant to the larger point of COVID-19, not in this context of the discussion of COVID-19, but the division that's happening around all of it, right? I mean, we must see how important that is to this larger discussion, right? The division amongst ourselves, where we're not pointing out that the government's the problem, right? It's that their neighbor's the problem. The other party's the problem. Right. And that is what it's all about. It's about getting us to fight ourselves so we don't realize what's really going on. Right. So this part to start with is something that I really feel has been going on for that same reason for long before this COVID-19 part. But right now it's being really, really driven hard. Everyone's bombing me now with, we can hear you. I know. I apologize for the mistakes, guys. So I put this out and this is the, the Daily Mail article saying BBC bans white people from applying for £18,000 trainee job. Now, yes, Daily, look, this is the frustrating part for people that operate within the two-party illusion and see somebody like me they don't know share this. What's their immediate assumption? Well, this guy's a right winger, right? Because look at what he said, and he doesn't think racism is real, and he's sharing the Daily Mail. All ridiculously ignorant and false assumptions about what I did. But you see, this is what happens when you're lost in the two-party paradigm. You're lost because you assume based on what you're told to believe. Oh, most people do anyway. I'm not assuming everybody in the two-party paradigm thinks the same way. I'm telling you that the people that are lost in this way of thinking have a very specific way of going about information, right? And that's very clear. In general, there's always the people in any situation that could be different, but look at what we're staring at here. There is no context that makes this any different. I'm not saying because Daily Mail shared it that it's correct. What I'm saying is, if you have a position that you're only accepting certain people of certain races for that position, that is literally the definition of racism. I don't care what the context is. The person arguing about this is saying, well, they passed a law that made them allow, they're allowed to do this in certain situations. So you're racist. And it's like, did you hear what you just said? So who allows what? Like, so they just make a new thing that says this is no longer racist, so therefore it's no longer racist. These people trust authority, just like with COVID, and because authority says it, therefore it is fact. That's ignorance. The point is that you are making a position only for certain colors. I don't care what color that is. That is literally racism. That's literally discrimination. If we can't point that out, if we're not intelligent or honest enough to recognize that, and it doesn't mean racism doesn't exist, it doesn't mean anything other than that situation there in its own context is racist. We all know that. The frustrating part is it's become so acceptable today to simply say that, well, if you're white, you're automatically racist. If you're black, you're not, no matter what you say or any other race in that discussion. That's ridiculous. That's racist. And this is the problem, is I can say something that's so obviously correct and it becomes contentious. But we need to see that this is happening. And your media, your governments are playing their role. Now, on the note of censorship, this is a really important one. This is really crazy. Now, I haven't really gotten too deep into this because I just saw this before before going live and getting the show prepared. But this is not a joke. PressTV.com's website. This is what you'll see when you go to their website. This website has been seized. The domain, PressTV.com, has been seized by the United States government in accordance with a seizure warrant issued pursuant to whatever code they're claiming. Now, this is... Now, let's not look. Is this an American website? I mean, it depends on where they're hosting and certain things are, but we have to understand this is a website that is, bottom line, the infrastructure is not United States. But even if this is literally, you know, Press TV operating literally out of the United States, which I believe that could be this in the way that they do this site in the United States, it still makes an obvious point for how obviously they do not believe in free speech. The entire website gets taken down. Why? Under what guise? As it says, the Bureau of Industry and Security Office of Export Enforcement. Oh, so what the, and the FBI, of course. So that either implies that they're somehow, my opinion, helping facilitate terrorism, which I'm sure they're going to argue, or somehow working with them to help them export, or, you know, who knows? The bottom line is this is censorship. And this is, and it's not, as you can see, it's not just Press TV. Sites that he says he's seeing that have been seized by the U.S. government. Of course, we have Yemen's Houthi rebels. Well, that's not perfectly lined up with their agenda. We have people, basically the bottom line is these are people that are expressing information that they don't agree with. A lot of it accurate, true. I haven't gone through everything on every one of these websites, but I know Press TV, for instance, has a lot of very accurate information you won't find in the Western press. Also, a lot of propaganda aimed in their direction, just like the other side. But the problem is that they're censoring what they don't like, acting like they are the honest ones no matter what. And we know that's not true. So the point is, this is coming to you next. It's coming to me next. If we think we're going to get past this, if they're taking these things down from the root, it's one step away from claiming that what I am doing by spreading truthful information is creating vaccine terrorism, and we're suddenly threats, which we're already being built as. So we need to see where this is going. This is the next, this, I mean, not next, this is what's happening now, in my opinion. And this is an argument for what I keep seeing with this show, as well as a lot of other people that are seeing this. This is from May 20th, 2020. The rise of internet throttling, a hidden threat to media development. This is not a new thing. We all know about this. But the article, I'm not going to go through in depth, is talking specifically not just about throttling from platforms, but throttling from internet companies. Throttling from the top down, even above that. Having the government step in and throttle the flow of the data. So you literally, no matter, like I say, here my internet's flying, memory's through the roof. From every possible thing I can control, there's nothing better I can do. And yet somehow we have issues with audio dropping out, throttling, loading across the board, even on my local recording, which means it's coming through. You know, anyway, the point is right here, we're seeing them build their control mechanism to continue to control the flow of information, which, of course, yes, in the direction that's being built, which we'll get to later, using blockchain technology, which is very alarming. This is going to connect with that, obviously. So now you have a position, where you have a situation where it's just, imagine a situation where everything at any moment is the flip of a switch and you're just excommunicated. You can't operate. And this is what we're already seeing, guys. It's already happening. Now, not to belabor the point on this, this is meant to be an opener. I want to make another thing here, another point to open up the conversation for COVID-19 about something else that we've all taken for granted our entire lives. Most of you might already know this, but this is a conversation I've had more than once over the last probably 10 years. I always find this fascinating. And I might have even brought it up before. But this is an example of how obviously we can be played by lobbyists, by the scientific evidence that's presented as the fact that turns out to be false. And now, is that because they were wrong? Is that because they were paid, influenced, directed, or completely lied? You pick. But they were wrong, you see? And so this is trusting the science turning into, oh, it looks like there was far more going on than just good people fighting for good information, right? Here is the Scientific American from January 21st, 5 years ago, or 6 years, 2015. There's a rumor going around that dairy products contribute to osteoporosis by acidifying your body. The headline is milk bad for your bones. Now, we all heard grow up this, you know, milk does a body good, and the obviously completely backward and wrong food pyramids that are completely influenced by industries and lobbyists, which we all should know by now. It's a joke when you look at our absurd food pyramid with milk and dairy and meat at the top. It's because they're influenced. The point being, this has been coming out for a long time. This is Scientific American trying to do a little bit of shade and a little bit of gaslighting around the milk industry. Of course, they admit in the beginning, people who are suspicious of milk's role in the bone health like to point out that countries with the highest consumption of dairy products also have the highest incidence of osteoporosis. There are many things that affect bone health, including genetic, physical, blah, blah, blah. And they go on to say, but any one of those things could be the reason. It could just be a coincidence. And that's actually where it ends. Great. Wow, that's some solid. Scientific American really knocked that one out of the park, right? Well, there's a lot of evidence to suggest this. And all we can say is, well, it could just be coincidence. Well, we sold that one down the river, didn't we? The point is, this is just a weird kind of like shadow. There's not a really conclusion. And even it links to this next part, which is just some weird health tip place that has like two more sentences. That's the article. Now, the point is, you step back a little further. Here's 2003. Dairy Monsters from The Guardian. You'll note an interesting development here. The further you go back in time, the more clear the picture gets. Isn't that funny? You'd think it'd be the other way around. Now, maybe that's because it got more convoluted, or maybe it's because there was more propaganda, more lobbyists, more aggressive action to make sure milk kept its seat on the table, right? It's funny, right? So let's go back to 2003. So we're way further back in time. Here's what it says. We used to take it for granted that milk was good for us, but now the industry faces a crisis. Well, so how could it be a crisis in 2003? But here's Scientific American pretty much going, well, we don't know. We don't know. Okay, so it's odd, isn't it? What it says, with the public questioning such assumptions, which we should be, just how healthy is milk? Does God's own PR company handle the account for milk? How else has it managed to hang on to its untarnished image despite gallons of evidence to the contrary? Weird. I mean, I guess Scientific American just kind of missed all that, right? The evidence, the scientific evidence, too, is massing up that regular consumption of large quantities of milk can be bad for your health. It says today, you should read this. There's more than it's health reasons other than your bones. And then the bone thing is actually completely the opposite. It says today, there's a big bank of scientific evidence against milk consumption, alleging not only that it causes some diseases, but equally damning, that it fails to prevent others for which it has traditionally been seen as a panacea. You know, specifically, they're talking about the bone discussion. Now, you can read this. Of course, they also try to play the other side of it, which I actually argue that this article is not bad. They give you counterpoints, which is what it should be in the world of not COVID clown world, right? Where you actually give both sides of an argument. They go over and they cite a bunch of people from the lobbies and different milk, pro-milk people, which I don't know what that means. People on the pro-milk side, it's like, pro-milk? Doesn't make sense. Obviously, that means they have an interest. People who are negative milk probably are concerned about health. But you go forward even further back here, or I guess back even further, October 6, 2000. 3 more years back. Well, here's what it says. It turns out that the relationship between the proteins in dairy products and the calcium in bones is a rocky one. First of all, calcium appears to be ultimately pulled from bones to escort digested animal protein from any source, not just dairy products, on its trek through the body. Since the average American's diet is protein heavy to begin with, some experts say that eating lots of dairy foods may actually cause people to lose calcium. Really, right? So the screaming about how this does your body good and builds calcium, makes you stronger, is literally the diametric opposite. Think about how crazy stupid that is, that we're in a world right now where we can't challenge science, challenge what they tell you the science is from the authorities, even though there are scientists screaming that they're wrong. We have situations. This is just one of an endless folder full of just constant situations where they're continually showing themselves to be wrong, where they say absolutely serious. There are 100% WMDs, whatever. And it continues, and you could argue, well, that maybe it turns around where it's like, well, they were slightly incorrect. It turns out where they were literally wrong in the opposite fashion. There's no way you look at the information and walk away going, oh, well, that it improves the thing that it actually takes from your body, unless you're lying. That's my opinion. But if from 2000 forward, everybody seems to have known this, and it only gets more clouded the further we get forward, something strange is going on, isn't it? Post-truth world, it would seem. Quote, When you eat a protein food, such as a milk, you may be swallowing calcium, but you turn around and excrete calcium in your urine, says Donna Herlock, medical doctor, spokeswoman for the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, a nonprofit advocacy group opposed to milk consumption. Right. So does that mean, is there some milk, like, are they working for the soy milk lobby? Probably not, because there's probably not a lobby that will even exist for that. If there is, I guarantee it's not even close to the milk lobby. I'm just kind of, you know, off the cuff right there. Who knows if there is? But the point is, my argument would be somebody who is advocating this seems to come from a place of concern. Whereas people at the pro-milk side, is that because they are so concerned for the calcium in your bones? No, it's probably because there's a lobby there. Do the research for yourself. I sure did, and it seems pretty obvious. But it says Herlock points to a portion of the Harvard Nurses Health Study published in the June 1997, even further back, issue of the American Journal of Public Health. The study found that women who ate lots of dairy products had higher rates of bone fractures than women who rarely touched the stuff. A Harvard study. And yet we can go forward going, milk does the body good, and aggressively propagandize people. Right? It's just, you can see how it went further forward and they did a good job lobbying and keeping this stuff quiet to where Scientific American of all groups can come out and be like, nah, probably coincidence. 10, 12 years after they know this stuff. Here is the last part of it. It's collective evolution. From 2019, scientist explains how cow's milk leaches calcium from your bones and makes them weaker. You can look at it for yourself. It's a reputable doctor scientist speaking on the reality, breaking it down for you. Milk from cows has been touted as making bones stronger, preventing conditions like plenty of things. It turns out that the complete opposite is the truth. The milk causes bone degeneration, by leaching calcium from the bones. Now, just please reflect on that for a minute today, especially for those that don't believe in a lot of the stuff or trust authority. Even if they were just wrong, which is a ridiculous way to be wrong, like a diametric opposite, we need to consider the possibility that they could just be wrong again, even if erring on the side of what's best for you, right? And then even further than that, recognize that they could have also just been lying or been paid or influenced or any number of things, and how that could happen today. Oh, I mean, think about, here's the craziest part about that first part. That's still happening. There are probably people right now, despite looking at the information, going, that's not true, that blah, 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 just because they're so ingrained with what they were told and they don't want to challenge what they believe is the truth. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible. But bringing this over into the COVID-19 sort of discussion to start this off, I just wanted to share this meme that I thought was absolutely fantastic, or cartoon, I guess. For those on the podcast, it says, trusting, quote, the science. And it shows a couple of pilgrims with a little teeter-totter. On one end is a witch tied to a chair being dunked in the water. On the other side, you have four pilgrims doing the dunking. And the apparatus has a name on it that says PCR test. Okay. And then it shows them speaking and it says 34 cycles, 35 cycles. They all test positive eventually. Just keep going, lads. Just keep dunking the witch underwater until eventually she either dies or she floats, or however that thing works, right? What was it? I think the thing is, you're supposed to put a witch in the water, and if she sinks to the bottom, she's a witch. If she doesn't, burn her alive or something like that. If she floats, then she, I forget how it goes. The point was that the argument, the absurd argument of this historical concept that's very real, is that one way they're a witch, the other way they die, right? That's the truth. I think it's if they sink, they're a witch. If they float, then, or backwards, if they sink, they're not a witch. If they float, then they are a witch. They burn them or something like that. And this is real. Look, there's a historical discussion. So the point is, we're at a point again where we're using a test that they will find what they want to find, regardless of how you do it. And it's just such a perfect analogy coming off that same point, right? Trust the science, except when it's wrong, right? I mean, we have to realize that that's a possibility. So this, we find ourselves in these absurd absolutes, right? Trust all women, like I keep pointing out. They do this in these moments of hyper-politicization, and we need to recognize that. Trusting the science in and of itself is an ignorant sentence. It really is. You don't trust the scientists laughed about this when this was first being stated, except the ones that get trotted out on the main channels with lots of speaking fees. But this brings us over into the point of how they are deceiving you at every single turn. This is one that we keep pointing out. This CBS points out the U.S. is not expected to hit Biden's 70% COVID vaccination goal by July 1st. Shocking. Who didn't see that coming? Because they keep screaming about how they're going to meet this and do that. And I've been showing you the whole time. We, right now, if you have not been injected and you're concerned about this, you are the majority in this country. In most places in the world, for that matter of fact, yet they're telling you that you're the danger, that you're the problem. We are the majority. I'll show you in a minute. Now, the funny part is they didn't hit this, which first of all shows you that we are not the crazy fringe weirdos they want you to think. But the reality is that the most of this country is concerned about what's really going on. But what's interesting is that they yet again cite information that, one, is sort of deceptive, but also shows you clearly, in my opinion, that they have moved the goalpost. What did we just talk about when Jen Psaki lied about this before, and then Biden lied about it after her, and then somebody on, I forget who it was, independent media, lied about it also, all just citing exactly the same thing with variant 49%, 50%, 52%, 75%, whatever. Jen Psaki first said they met 70%, which, by the way, when she said that, was false on both counts, and it's still false right now, whether one shot or not. Then Biden said 52%, we made it. Nope, not true. He was citing the one shot when it was 52%, right? Well, they were screaming that only one shot was not good enough this whole time, right? We all heard it incessantly. Timing is that you need your passport to make sure the timing is correct. Well, now they're just like, well, shoot, we're clearly not going to get everybody coercively. So we just need to lie and then probably transition over into passports and forceful aggression or forceful action. But listen to what she says right here.
Go ahead. Thanks, Jen. On COVID and missing the 70% deadline, as this White House said, what went wrong? What happened there? Was the goal too high? The number just not attainable?
Sure. Well, we don't see it exactly like something went wrong. How we see it is we set a bold, ambitious goal, something the president has done from the very beginning.
What's funny about that is this is why I can't stand these things anymore. I was just talking with somebody about this. I literally feel like you're dumber by the end of, because everything they're doing is spin, lies, obfuscation, and nonsense. That's what this is supposed to be. And we all know that. The journalists know it, or the stenographers know it, the talking heads know it. We all know it. It's just ridiculous. But so she's talking about this. We didn't really fail. What was the point of 70%? Do you remember? The aggressive repetition. We need to meet 70 at an absolute, because that's herd immunity. If we don't, we're all in danger. Okay. So not meeting that very necessary thing that you said was absolutely there because we had to meet it, we're all going to die, is not a failure. Well, that's a pretty pathetic sidestep. And I'm not agreeing with anything they're saying. I just think it's embarrassing how they try to play this as some, we set a bold goal for something that we told you was an absolute necessity. We didn't reach it, but we're okay with that now. Okay. How does that even make sense? Because they failed and now they're just trying to do damage control. Now they're going to spin this in some way about how you're the problem. Just like we keep telling you, it's all the anti-vaxxers. So they're telling you that the majority of this country is the problem. Make sure you understand that.
And we are expected to meet that goal just a couple weeks after July 4th. Nope. And in fact, at this point, as of today,
not even
we're
close.
Going to be already at that point for people who are 30 years of age and older. What we also know, though, and we've learned this as we've been working to get the pandemic under control, take on this Herculean task where there is no playbook, is that there are demographic groups and sometimes populations where it's more difficult to reach. We've seen that, and we've talked about that as it related to early on to hesitancy we were seeing in communities of color or some more conservative communities.
Oh, good. So Trump supporters and black people. Right. Just go ahead and say it, Jen. Right. Just don't tiptoe around it, you racist.
And we've seen it's been a great deal more difficult to get young people between the ages of 18 and 26 vaccinated than adults who are older than that. Hence, we are redoubling our efforts to ensure we are targeting, we are focused.
Okay, so what is she saying right here? We're at a point now where their plan has been seen to fruition. They didn't meet their goal, but they're there, right? So everybody has been offered this thing. The fact that they were slow rolling it out was also a lie, and I showed you that in the beginning. These drive-through things were giving it to literally anybody that came through, and I proved that. But the point was, they have offered it. Half this country, more than half this country, said hell no. Okay, so now we're at a point where they're just going to keep offering it. What does that show you? Well, we said no, nothing's changed. So you're going to keep coercively trying to throw this at people who don't want it. So you don't have a choice, right? I mean, this is the point. They're going to keep spending money, your tax dollars, to keep advertising, to keep propagandizing, to keep pushing this, to keep coercively doing things like with your job, at school, at the bus, at the concert, you know, but this is all aimed at people like you who made your choice. So you don't have a choice. You see what I'm saying? Like, we're not at a point where they're literally forcing this into your arm yet. And I'm not saying that'll happen for sure, but clearly it's possible, as we'll show you later. But they have made it very clear. Saying no is just a temporary thing. We're going to keep coming at you until you say yes, meaning you don't have the choice to say no. You can say not now, but it's got to swing back around because you have to take it. That is the whole message here. I hope that's clear to people, because they're going to keep going, even though everybody's already been offered and half this country said no.
Focusing on, we are making the vaccine more accessible for those age groups. But again, we are already meeting the goal of vaccinating with one dose 70% of Americans 30 years of age.
By the way, that's not even accurate. I mean, I'm not going to get into the specifics of the different age breakdowns, but there's so much more to this discussion. And why do you think they've gone from two shots at 70% to now one shot at 70 to now over 30, 70%? Like, they are reaching. And it's pathetic.
And older, and we are working toward meeting it for all adults as soon as possible.
I mean, like, the point should just be, I should counter always, if this was hypothetically an honest discussion, you'd simply be like, yes, we were aiming for 70, we didn't meet it. We're going to do our best to get there as soon as possible. That would be an honest answer, wouldn't it? And is that even bad? People all the time, there's 1,000 factors. It's not like you could say Biden failed. Which, you know, that's, of course, the two-party illusion would frame it that way. But there's 1,000 different factors. You just be honest and say, yeah, we didn't meet it. We wanted to, we didn't meet it. But you have to spend a four-minute breakdown of all these equivocations and nonsense. This is why it makes you stupid to listen to these things.
If I can follow up on voting rights here.
Okay, that was it for there. But to make the point for her, here it is. This is the breakdown. Now, I want you guys to recognize what this shows you. Look very closely. Right now, only 54% of this country has got one dose. That's it. 45% is fully vaccinated. 45. Right now. Okay? So you are the majority. And it's been that way from the very beginning. Well, it's obvious because it only gets higher if at all. You've always been the majority. You were then and you are now. The majority of this country is unvaccinated and has chosen not to be. Oh, by the way, most states are like that too. Most of them. New York, 52. But look, even California's 48. Right now in California, of all places, if you're unvaccinated, you are the majority. How do we explain that in a democracy that's supposed to represent the majority will, right? Well, they don't care what you think. They want to make their majority by force if necessary. Is that a real majority? Obviously not. But they don't care. The very, very, very screaming, loud, vocal minority don't care what you think, and they're going to make it what they want and then claim they're the majority because they forced you to do what they want. That's what we're dealing with right now. And this is the kind of person that is continuing to prolong this problem, right? You got people like Jen Psaki here playing their ridiculous political game, lying, obfuscating, stretching the truth, and just straight up making things up. And then you get people like this doctor here. I'm assuming he says he's a doctor, emergency physician. If he is, it's pretty damn embarrassing. Judson Merritt here, this is just a guy I pointed out before who was saying his hospital's now making them take classes to manage thromboembolism. Of course, that's obviously connected with the fact that we're seeing all sorts of thrombotic and thrombocytopenia type events after these injections. That they're all totally rare and fake news, and yet they're giving people in hospitals training for how to deal with that. Come on. And also, plus anticoagulant therapy. We're going to get to that part next about AstraZeneca in a moment. Very important about AstraZeneca having a protein that specifically treats blood clots inside the injection. Why would that be there? It's almost like they knew there was going to be a problem, and it still didn't do any good job. But the point is, he said false. We talked about this. It went back and forth. And he simply says, no, the vaccine should confer longer lasting and more robust immunity. He's wrong. He's simply wrong. It should also prevent asymptomatic spread. The Wuhan study we talked about, which, let's see. There it is. I thought I had it up and I closed it and I forgot why I had it open. It was for this exact point. I'll include this showing you, this is the study showing you importantly, where was I here? Yeah, here we are. The study importantly showing you 10 million people. It found only 300 cases of asymptomatic, none of which were infectious. think about that ratio and understand that the asymptomatic threat is simply not there. And plenty of other studies have found exactly the same thing. They just don't care about that. So anyway, the point is he's wrong about everything he's saying. Now, I'm not claiming he's doing it from a malicious standpoint. He's simply wrong. This is a doctor making medical decisions for you based on false information because he chooses to believe authority instead of being an intelligent person doing research for himself. Right. So I said incorrect. What's crazy is that one only misses this if they are simply not looking. Yet here you are, a doctor shouting down information. And I show him the point, antibodies from natural can last a lifetime. This is from nature.com, right? This is not even something he can dismiss. Now, I'm not saying it means that because it's nature means it's true. From his position, that is something that's, you know, it's like the Lancet. You throw it in their face and they're going to go, oh, you know, they don't want it. That's something that is supposed to be something you blindly trust from the mainstream. I also add, oh, this too, and show you how it says very clearly in the FDA document as of May 19th, the duration of protection against COVID is currently unknown. So here he is telling people, get the injection. It has a longer lasting immunity, even though it says in the FDA that they don't know how long it lasts and that natural lasts your lifetime. And he's wrong. He comes and he responds, and this is my point. Teach me more about science, person who hails theology in his profile. Okay, well, what he's talking about is the fact that this profile, which is Ignatius J. Reilly, which is a character from a book called Confederacy of Dunces, it says rules must be imposed before the U.S. destroys itself, needs theology and geometry, some taste and decency. I suspect that we're teetering on the edge of the abyss, which, by the way, is a quote from that book. And by the way, I'm not sure why needing theology and geometry would be something that you would laugh at personally, but here's what he did. And here's what I said. Nice deflection. Or actually not at all. Seeing as how that is a character from a book called Confederacy of Dunces. Might want to read it as it's talking about you. And the tagline is a quote from the book. Anything else? Or can we get back to how wrong you were, Doc? Of course, no follow-up. Because he's realizing that there's no way to argue he wasn't wrong. So he tried to make fun of me with an ad hominem attack. This is a doctor, guys. An emergency doctor. Who won't even admit with new information that he was wrong because COVID-19 has broken people like this. My point is clearly that we have to be able to stand back and recognize that there's more going on than what we're being told from the mainstream. It's just crazy. Now, when I say they're talking about him, the concept of Confederacy of Dunces is about the idea of the Confederacy of Dunces is an analogy for the mainstream media, for the government, for the institutions that are gaslighting you with things you're supposed to think, even though, and the point is, my opinion, my personal opinion based on the context of this discussion in the book, it's about people who think they're right, but don't even know what they're talking about. And they're convinced, and this is the idea. That's what he is. And it's people like this on Twitter or in their practices that are helping people like this, like Jen and like Biden's administration, like Trump's administration, that are gaslighting and pushing nonsensical lies, even when they might even think that they're accurate. And what's a good example of that? Vitamin D. Here's an interesting point. Let me just show you this first. This is from before. This is actually from January 8th of this year. This is Georgia, a court order in Georgia. Tells defendants to stop selling vitamin D products as treatments for COVID-19, but it also includes and other diseases. So because COVID-19 broke the world, apparently, one of the most important supplements that we've always all known that Fauci said he would give his patients for COVID-19 in the beginning of all this, vitamin D, is suddenly not allowed for any other things. You can't market this for helping your immune system for the flu. Apparently not in Georgia anymore. And this is the crazy nature of where we are. Here is a new article as of the 17th of this month from an Israeli researcher. 1 in 4 COVID patients hospitalized while vitamin D deficient die. Israeli study. Among those without deficiency who were hospitalized, only 3% die. Patients with insufficient vitamin D are also 14 times more likely to end up in severe or critical condition. By the way, I would argue that's probably accurate with any issue you're dealing with. It will be worse if you're vitamin D deficient, because this is very important. And it's amazing that we're even having this conversation. Hospitalized COVID-19 patients are far more likely to die or to end up in severe or critical condition if they are vitamin D deficient, according to Israeli researchers. Get this. In a study conducted by Galilee Hospital, 26% of vitamin D deficient coronavirus patients died, while among other patients, the figure was only 3%. We're talking about a 23% increase in fatality. And we're pretending like this isn't necessary? Good God. I mean, this is the problem, guys. This is what happens when the guys like we're talking about, like Mr. Merritt here, will trust what he's told and then parrot the lie and scream down people on Twitter about using vitamin D, even though we've all known it's there. I'm not saying he's doing that. I'm using the analogy in the context of this discussion, which was about the vaccine. But this is the problem, because this is obvious. And if you have discernment, if you can stand back and go, well, they tell me this is dangerous, but wait a minute. I know it's not. I've been taking this before. We all have talked about it before. Vitamin D is a constant staple. So we should go, but maybe they're wrong. Maybe they're lying. It's incredible. Here's a really important one in regard to ivermectin. And yes, I haven't talked about any of this stuff. This is probably the first time I've even talked about this in a real way, because this is, I find this to be pretty powerful. Now, this is not just a study done by, you know, frontline doctors, which, by the way, I'm not dismissing. I have talked about this before in regard to how these things have shown very clear efficacy. I just don't like to promote any kind of big pharma drug. My point is always is it should be your choice. The problem I have an issue with the fact that the government and institutions are telling you're not allowed to use this. That's what's crazy to me. But here's what the Pierre Corey, medical doctor, says. Now, Pierre Corey, I believe, was also one of these. I believe he was with Frontline Doctors. I think that's where I saw him before, which I'm not, again, just so we're clear, I have great respect for them. I mean, they've been coming out at a time speaking about things and the problem is you point to something to people who are lost in the two-party paradigm and suddenly you're a right-winger because you like one thing or the other. And again, speaks to my earlier point. If you're lost in the two-party paradigm, you're just lost. But he says, where the F is the major media? A historic landmark paper identifies the real game-changer drug in COVID. And again, that's his opinion. And they dutifully keep censoring. Memo to the media. The agencies are captured. They just... I don't know what that expletive is supposed to be. Gave pharma over $4 billion to invest. But here's the tweet. A Cochrane Standard, which is the highest review, and meta-analysis of ivermectin against COVID-19 by Bryant Lowry, now peer-reviewed and published, concludes the evidence justified the global adoption. This is a big deal, right? This is a valid study. Now, again, as I always point out, peer-reviewed or otherwise doesn't necessarily mean that it's absolutely true, which is sort of the way they want you to think, even though they regularly dismiss peer-reviewed science that they don't like. But it simply means that it's been accepted, that the study was done in the proper way, that other scientists have reviewed it and agree that it was done in the proper way, right? And so take it for what you will. But what's interesting is this is being ignored, like a lot of other stuff around COVID-19 that they don't like. Now, this was June 17, 2021, right? So this should be breaking news if they cared about honest information. Ivermectin for prevention of treatment of COVID-19. This is a systematic review, meta-analysis, right? So remember, what this means that they've looked at all the other studies, or they'll list off the ones they did review and combine the information and giving it to you. Now look, you just, you know, PhD, 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 medical doctor, right? Just as always, the absurd idea that anything that challenges the narrative is anti-science or fake news. These are experts telling you what they think. Now, here's the point. Repurposed medicines may have a role against the SARS-CoV-2 virus. The antiparasitic ivermectin with antiviral and anti-inflammatory properties has now been tested in numerous clinical trials. Now, this is before. There was plenty of tests before this that showed a very clear efficacy, and there's been more. Okay? Conclusions. Moderate certainty evidence finds that large reductions in COVID-19 deaths are possible using ivermectin. Using ivermectin early in clinical course may reduce numbers progressing to severe disease. The apparent safety and low cost suggest that ivermectin is likely to have a significant impact on the SARS-CoV-2 pandemic globally. That is a really powerful finding, even if it is waffly, which is how they always do these, especially with a contentious topic. But at the bottom line, they're telling you that there's no reason this shouldn't be used at all. In fact, it's very clear that the science suggests that this is a positive. And clearly, the reason they're not, in my opinion, is because if they did use this early, well, there'd be no need for a vaccine, right? And on top of that, if this was an effective treatment that was being used widely, well, they wouldn't be allowed to emergency authorize any of this stuff. Uh-oh, suddenly, there's a very clear reason why they're ignoring all of this stuff. And I think we see that with how aggressively they're forcing the injection on children as well.
which we'll get to in the next part, the WHO. But I find this to be powerful. And I recommend you read the science for yourself, the scientific research, and you look it up, compare it with other arguments, and realize that this seems pretty sound. And by the way, this is, I mean, look up articles, like go the Wayback Machine and look up things from before this all started about ivermectin. That's the best thing you can do because it's pretty obvious, as well as other ones, by the way, hydroxychloroquine, remdesivir. There's plenty of evidence to suggest that there is no reason they shouldn't be used. Should be your choice. The only reason they're removed from the equation is because without them there, they're allowed to emergency authorize injections based on a new experimental platform and revolutionize the medical industry based on there's nothing else we can do. But that's all a big lie, and we should know that by now. Now, going over into the discussion, oh, here, let me bring this back so I don't forget. Shall I show him? The discussion of children and injections around COVID-19, and this is crazy to me. Just because of how quickly this has been happening. And WHO has been one of the biggest culprits here. Now, I came over here to talk about this today and opened the page to find out that it was different. One day later. Now, there's two things to point out here. First of all, let me actually do this real quick. If you go back to the Wayback Machine and look at the page from yesterday, which I believe, you can see at the top there. So June 21st, right? You can see very clearly, first of all, it says as of June 3rd. Okay, so they haven't updated this since June 3rd. And July, June 21st. So you'd argue if they were going to update it today, well, then it would say as of June 22nd, right? But it doesn't. It still says as of June 3rd. Oh, this is the one I just duplicated right here. Here's the new one. You can see this is the fresh as of right now. I'll even refresh it for you. Wait, make sure I didn't. How I did highlight stuff. So this is as of right now. I'll refresh it when we're done. Still says as of June 3rd. First point. Okay, so WHO is telling you that nothing has changed, right? As of June 3rd, this information, right? We haven't changed anything. Otherwise, we would tell you the date was different, right? Okay, so if something did change and the date was staying there, you could argue that's a deceptive, dishonest thing to do. Okay, so going here, you can go back to the other captures of this. Now, I want to point something out. You can go back pretty far. Here. So this is the furthest one. So going back to April 8th, 2020 or 2021, you'll notice that it also says the same thing. And here, first of all, here's what it says. It says children should not be vaccinated for the moment. Okay. That's on June 21st. That's a big deal. Whether it was there before or whether it was just added, which is sort of the what argument swirling around the internet. They're telling you that children should not be vaccinated, and yet everybody is not only making that happen, they are aggressively making that happen, coercing children, manipulating them, telling them they don't need their parents' consent, violating international law. But I just noticed that. What is that? Oh, I thought that was a link. While the WHO is very clearly stating that that shouldn't be happening. So this whole shouldn't challenge WHO guidelines is nonsense. It only applies to people. It only applies when they want to censor somebody about something they don't like, right? But my point when showing you this is here's April 8th. It's right there. Okay, so this wasn't new. So that's one thing. It's always important to look this in. You don't just take the Twitter feed discussion because that's usually not all the full picture. So it's important to point out that on April and however far back this goes, this was the earliest Wayback Machine, that they had that already in there, right? So you can argue from the very beginning that was stated like this because that's the point. They did say this because in the beginning that was the discussion. We don't know. And it's still that way because they're still doing ridiculous month-long trials and claiming that's enough to tell you it's safe for kids, even though we're having this huge problem with seemingly everybody, but under 30 specifically with myocarditis. But the point is simply that this was there before. So you couldn't argue that it was added yesterday and then suddenly removed the next day, right? That's an important thing to point out. But it does not change the fact that as of yesterday, it was clearly telling you that children should not be vaccinated. And then because people noticed that, that's what I think happened. People started circulating online. Look what the WHO just said, even though it was there, right? Didn't just say it. And then within less than 24 hours, it's gone. That is so dishonest. And it also shows you that they didn't even change the date, right? They want you to just pretend like it was never there. Or at the very least, that they didn't allow it to be there throughout the period where they were injecting children, right? They're trying to cover their tracks. Well, it says on June 3rd, they say these things are safe or say that they have met necessary criteria for safety and effectiveness, which, by the way, only means that that's emergency authorized criteria because that's all they have to meet right now, which, by the way, the definition of that means they don't know if it's safe and effective. So recognize when they say it meets the necessary criteria for that title in emergency authorization, it means that we don't fully know, which they'll admit in the discussion of what unapproved drugs are. But it says now children and adolescents tend to have milder disease compared to adults. That in and of itself is a simply false statement. They have a 0% chance, according to the CDC, according to everybody, for that matter, according to the science, according to multiple scientific research, according to everything we'll show you in a second. All right. I mean, that's zero. So they change it to say, well, kind of. So they want you to think that that's the narrative now. Well, if there's any risk at all, but the problem is that there is a much larger risk of side effects and negative effects, in fact, from these injections and all sorts of other long-term problems. So as I said before, if it's a fraction of a risk, it's too much risk for someone who has 0% risk from this, whatever you want to call it. Tend to have milder disease, which implies that they get infected, which in and of itself has not even been fully proven. So unless they are part of a group at higher risk of severe COVID-19, it is less urgent to vaccinate them than older people, those with chronic health conditions and health workers. Okay. Well, that, by the way, even that challenges what's currently happening. So unless they're part of a group at higher risk of severe COVID-19. Okay, so by default, that they're children, they're not in that group. So all they did was create a sentence that says the same thing in a very confusing way. Children tend to have milder disease. And unless they're in a group, which we just said they're not because they're children, then they should get this they're in a category that's obviously not high risk. Even children with comorbidities do not, I mean, it's basically nothing. And that's what this study is right here, in fact. By the way, this is from 2020. Ask yourself why the British Medical Journal can put this out in 2020, which is there's the date right here, June 2020, right? This is from British Medical Journal, Global Health, BMJ, predicted COVID fatality rates, right? Okay. All the way back in the middle of 2020, here's what they're telling you the age risk is for under 19. Make sure you see this clearly. 0.00004. For females with no comorbidities, 0.00004 for males with no comorbidities. Oh, but if you have over 0.1, arguably, or more, 0.0361, 0.0397. So not at risk, right? Now, it's even with comorbidities. Now, this is, by the way, changed a lot, and it's actually gone far, far, far lower since then. But the reality here, guys, is, there was the part for, I wanted to make sure it was clear. The LIC up top stands for low income country. LMIC up here is lower middle income country. So all they're breaking down is different locations, right? So this is for people in lower income countries, but the bottom one here is more important. The UMIC stands for upper middle class country. So this we're talking about in the United States, right? HIC is for high income country. So even the countries, especially the countries with high, I mean, look, if you just look up here for lower, it's not that much different, right? I mean, but you can keep going forward. Here's 20 to 29. This is in 2020, guys. It's gotten lower since then. This is the British Medical Journal. Why are the mainstream media telling you that they are in danger? Why were they forcing this from the beginning, even questioning the possibility when the data was right there? 0.00021% for 29 and lower. 0.00034% for males, 29 and lower. How about 39 and below? 0.0014%. 49 and below, 0.0035%. You see where this is going? Now, look, you go all the way up to 59 and below, 0.01% risk. But then you get, 80 plus. Well, that becomes 3.77. There's all your number right there. Oh, and don't forget, as the Swiss policy research told you, COVID-19, the graph is exactly in line with natural mortality, which means it has a risk, but no more risk than living your life. That's why you see the number increase right there, because we have elderly people that are being put in weird positions that are increasing their death rate. And then everything else we're adding that just can, that trickles that down. And then you average it all out and pretend that we're all in danger. They have always known that's not true. That data in front of you right now blows that out of the water. And we've been saying this from the beginning. So when we're staring at them telling you, unless they're part of a high risk age group, well, they're not. And they've never been. Neither has most of the country. Then it goes on to say more evidence is needed on the use of different COVID vaccines in children to be able to make general recommendations on vaccine. Okay, again, my point is all they did was make a more confusing statement of the same thing. Children should not be vaccinated for the moment. Yes, that's exactly what that says too, but they just don't want people like us to be able to point to that and show other people who don't read what it actually says. You see what I mean? They want the people that buy the narrative to read this and go, well, they don't say they shouldn't. Well, yes, they do, in fact. They say we don't have the information to make this decision. So that means no. It goes on to say, though, after telling you that more evidence is needed to make a recommendation to do it, they go on and say, but the SAGE group, the Strategic Advisory Group of Experts, which has been shown to be part of this problem from the beginning, has concluded that the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine is suitable for use by people 12 years and above. Okay, so we don't have evidence to suggest this is safe, but this group says it is. So go ahead and do it. Children age group 12 and 15 are at high risk, it says. Children age between 12 and 15 who are at high risk, which is none of them, may be offered this vaccine alongside their priority groups for vaccination. What other priority groups? This is the WHO, guys, we're reading from. Do they not know the British Medical Journal, right? I mean, how does this work? Vaccine trials for children are ongoing. Why exactly? And WHO will update its recommendations when the evidence. Okay, this is my point, right? So that June 3rd was the last time they updated it, right? So why then did they come in and quietly change this and not update the date? Because they wanted to hide something from you. That's very clear. Or obfuscate the truth, or hide the truth because it's creating vaccine hesitancy, being misrepresented by conspiracy theorists. Well, that's still hiding something. Stay at the place where you get vaccinated for at least 15 minutes afterward. Right. Because, you know, all those things happening 2 days, weeks, months afterward. Yeah. Not connected at all. Right. After you're vaccinated, here's an important part. So after you're injected, right? All the people out there, they got their injection. We're all safe now. Changing, you know, restrictions and quarantine. Take your mask off. It's all good. Right. Well, guess what? Here's the WHO says. Remember, we can't challenge WHO, right? While a COVID-19 vaccine will prevent serious illness and death, which, by the way, I don't even know how that makes sense with the following statement, we still don't know the extent to which it keeps you from being infected and passing the virus on to others. So if their data, at the most, says that it reduces mild to moderate symptoms, which I've read to you 100 times directly from their most current documents, how do you know it prevents death if it only prevents mild to moderate symptoms? And they don't know whether it prevents hospitalization. So explain that to me. They're just stating what the narrative is. That's what WHO is there for, or the people they have in place to do what they're told. It says, we still don't know the extent to which it keeps you from being infected and passing on to others. We still don't know the extent. You listening, Judson Merritt, Dr. Judson Merritt, are you paying attention? We still don't know the extent to which it keeps you from being infected. So how can you argue that it has longer lasting immunity? Because you're repeating a mainstream narrative as a doctor. And how ignorant is that? The point is, you can still spread it. You can still catch it. The real world evidence is abundant. And they tell you that we don't know because they didn't even try to find out. And even other studies have shown quite clearly that it can still. I mean, the idea of this breakthrough case conversation, it shows you very clearly. Now, it says the more we allow the virus to spread, the more opportunity the virus has to change. Well, plenty of people are telling you that the vaccine itself is what's causing these things to change. But it says continue to take actions and slow down, eventually stop the virus. So here it is. People who have been injected, even though they don't know it stops transmission, still need to do what? Keep at least 1 meter apart. Wear a mask. Clean your hands frequently, which people should be doing anyway. Cover coughs or sneezes, which you should be doing anyway. When indoors and others, ensure good ventilation. So keep doing everything the same. Social distance, wear a mask, blah, 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 even though you got the injection. How is it different from what I am living my life as? Not at risk, not injected, doing the same things, right? So all it's been so far amounted to is people that got injected are the ones dealing with all the problems. Exactly. But WHO will continue to gaslight and obfuscate and lie to you. And people that are currently injecting children, either whether you're looking at the thing from yesterday or the thing from today, are doing something wrong based on the fact that there is not enough evidence to suggest that this is safe. But that's why they're coming out with these brand new research studies from June 11th, implications of SARS-CoV-2 viral load in children. Okay, so ask yourself why we need another study to find something that we've already researched a bunch, right? And I've gone over plenty of these. From the very beginning, there's been endless are children at risk and are the studies show? And we all know this is why we have this. Because this is one of those studies, right? They did this already. And we have the information. But so now they're just circling back because they don't like what they found, right? They want to hear children are in danger. So they fund research, which I'll show you next. But it says, although early data suggests that children only accounted for 2%, right? So meaning, and only 2% of those children in hospitals. Well, let me read this first. Although early data suggested that children accounted for only 2% of COVID cases, more recent reports have indicated that 13% of diagnosed cases in the U.S. have occurred in children. Additionally, the number of COVID hospitalizations among children is similar to that observed in a typical flu season, and COVID deaths in children exceeded the total observed amount. Okay, it's June 11th. So you'd imagine that a study on JAMA Network that's going over specifically children and that you'd think they would do their due diligence, right? You'd think that they would go, oh, here's a breaking new study that already found 100% that child hospitalization numbers were inflated by at least 40%. Well, that was on May 19th, 2021. Okay, so you see my point. This is there. They know it's there because or they didn't do any research and just found what they were paid to find. You can't then sit here and state that the numbers of hospitalizations are so, because that has already been shown to be false based on other very sound research that was shared by the mainstream media. You see? So this is about finding what they want to find so they can point to the one that they like. The reality is that there's a huge illusion happening here around children in general. Stanford doctor, coronavirus fatality rate for people under 45 is almost zero. We know all of this. But here's what they're finding. Children are actually possibly... But it goes on to say, it is more important to address three key questions. What is the role of children in community transmission of infectious pathogens? Well, the same it is with anybody. The idea is that people can pass things if that's what you believe, right? So to argue, what's the role of this? It's what it has always been. They're trying to redefine everything. But it says, what is the role of children specifically in SARS-CoV-2 transmission? Well, nothing. It's quite clear that we already showed you that symptomatic is how it spreads. And Fauci said this himself. They're not symptomatic and they don't have it as far as we can tell. And they're not at risk. So easy question to answer. Finally, what can be done to get children safely back to daycare? Put them back in daycare. End of story. Right? But go ahead and read this for yourself. This whole thing is coming to the conclusion that, well, the risk that might be there is enough to stop this because they probably have viral load that we're fine. This is where it's going. My point is not to show you the study. You can read it for yourself. It's quite clear what they want to find in the direction they're going. And you know why that's quite clear? As somebody pointed out on tweet, well, get this out or check this out. Conflict of interest disclosures, which a lot of people skip over. Well, every doctor included here has ties to people you might find interesting. They received funds to conduct clinical research from BioFire Inc., MedImmune, Regeneron, PaxVax, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, Novavax, Sanofi, Pasteur, Janssen & Janssen, Micron. Okay, all the bright people, right? Co-inventor of patent respiratory synactical virus vaccine technology. Okay, because they're not tied to the vaccine industry at all, which has been licensed to Maisa Vaccine Inc. She reports support from none other than the NIH to conduct COVID-19 vaccine and other clinical research. Isn't that perfect? Paid to her institution. That's one of the doctors. The other doctor supports also from NIH, specifically for research and COVID-19 vaccines and clinical trials, paid to his institution. Dr. Anderson has received personal fees from AbbVie, Pfizer, Sanofi for consulting. Funds to conduct clinical research relate also... funds to conduct clinical research from MedImmune, Regeneron, PaxVax, Pfizer, GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, Novavax, all of them. Sanofi, Janssen & Janssen. He serves on a safety monitoring board for none other than Sanofi Pasteur, Kentucky Bioprocessing, and also got support from NIH to conduct COVID-19 vaccine research. This is ridiculous. I mean, it's like you literally went and picked out the most compromised people who have obvious financial ties to the very people that this could affect and said, find what we want to find. I mean, it's just ridiculous, right? But this is where we are. This is how it gets paid to find what they want. That's my opinion. At the very least, with such obvious conflicts of interest, I think it's pretty ridiculous. The point is, we can see this all the way back from 2020, and then we have this today, as I've already shown you. Systematic review meta-analysis. I've shown you this more than once. A systematic review encompassed 113 studies of infection fatality rate around COVID-19. There is no better compilation of all the information, and as I said before, their analysis finds of all the research an exponential relationship between age, infection, fatality for COVID-19, which is what we just showed you, even going back to the older one. That the vast majority of people under 40, 50, 60 even, are pretty much not at risk. But it's the point in this discussion now is younger adults, even the updated 0.002% under age 10, 0.01% age 25. Now, remember, this is a meta-analysis, right? So they're including all the ones that wildly overshot it. It's like the 3.6% or whatever else. So the reality is, if you're looking at the one they originally told you, and then they include even the crazy high ones, it's still telling you that you're not in danger. But here we are. Here, going to the next part, is another really important discussion in regard to the lies we're being told about the injections. And this one specifically is AstraZeneca. Now, the blood clot discussion was dismissed left and right. Everyone, fake news, AstraZeneca hasn't been proven. There's no proof, even though the blood clot discussion is mostly coming from the Pfizer injection, but we're just hiding that fact. Last time I checked, it's almost double the reports coming from Pfizer. They just don't talk about it. And I think that's because they want to focus on the mRNA platforms, which is the future of all this. But AstraZeneca has been the one that's been got kind of thrown under the bus about causing blood clots. Isn't that interesting? Well, here's a very interesting study that someone shared with me. I was in a rush today. I give credit to the people that throw these to me. I just forgot. I think I have his tweet up. October 15, 2020. So back in October 2020, here's a study saying severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS-CoV-2 spike protein based vaccine candidates, state of the art and future prospects. Talking about the AstraZeneca. Okay, here you'll find something very telling. Somebody pointed this out to me. This is completely somebody else's research, and I'm very happy that they showed me this. TPA, tissue plasminogen activator. Okay, that's one of the abbreviations, TPA, and you'll find in here that it's listed more than once in this discussion. It's a very important part of this, and you'll find that they're talking specifically about the AstraZeneca vaccine. Is a replication-deficient simian adenovirus vector containing the full-length codon-optimized coding sequence of SARS-CoV-2 S-protein along with a tissue plasminogen activator, TPA, leader sequence. So we're very clear that this is inside the AstraZeneca injection, right? That's important. Now, you're asking, what does that do? Well, here it is. Tissue plasminogen activator. Tissue plasminogen activator is a protein involved in the breakdown of blood clots. Well, isn't that telling? So why would they need an ingredient to break down blood clots? Now, maybe that's something they always do. Maybe that's something that I didn't see it anywhere else. Maybe I missed it. The point is that this is something that is involved in breaking down blood clots in one of the injections that has been pointed to causing blood clots. Now, doesn't that seem to suggest foreknowledge, or at the very least that they're concerned that it might do that, and they're taking this step to stop it from happening? Now, if that's the case, wouldn't the argument then be that they knew there was a problem and they didn't show you that? Yes. But by the way, this is something we already know, because we've shown the research before that showed you this was something that was a concern. We've shown you doctors that were speaking out about things they saw in the research. People like James Lyons-Weiler, and they just don't talk about it. They ignored it. Well, there's a lot of this happening, and you're not going to hear this from the mainstream media. But if they have this ingredient in there, it seems to suggest to me that they knew there would be a problem and they were trying to counteract that. And I think they know this because of efforts to do this from before we got here. Sort of like increasing the lipid nanoparticle, or increasing the dose and using the lipid nanoparticles to help deliver this, except the problem that was the increased dose is always caused very high increased adverse events. They thought they solved that. Maybe that's why they skipped the animal trials, so we wouldn't see that they didn't. But the reality is there's far, far, plenty of evidence to show us that this is a problem. And here's even mainstream media in Australia. I think it was Australia. Well, we'll find in a second. I'm remembering off the top of my head. But they're telling you something that the mainstream won't want to admit, which is that you were right. Right? They'll never do that. They will never tell you that you were right. That the whole time, your concern, your hesitancy was well-founded. Even, and I'll read what I say afterward. Let's watch the clip.
I mean, to have a scenario where you've got patients coming in going, hi, doctor, here's a tweet saying the messaging's changed and you're about to give a jab, that to me, I find towards the upper end of astonishing.
Absolutely. And all of the patients who said, I'm going to wait for a Pfizer, and we GPs would go, no point waiting. It's not going to happen. The only one you can have is the AstraZeneca. Let me give that to you. Well, it turns out we were wrong. They were right. And all of those people who were vaccine hesitant are now like looking really, really smart. And all the people who did the right thing and went to go and get the vaccine earlier look like they were being really, really silly. And that's a big problem for credibility. And it's seen a number of GPs just go, I'm out. I don't want to do COVID vaccination clinics anymore. You know what? Go and get it somewhere else.
Well, let me dwell on what you've just said there, because it bears dwelling upon. If we have a large number of GPs in Australia who are prepared to do what you've just described and say to the government, hang on, we are no longer prepared to stake our credibility on giving your vaccine, then that leaves this country in a vaccine crisis. Because
and now, how is that the finding, right? I mean, why can't you recognize what that shows you? These doctors are aware that there's an issue with honesty here, and they don't want to be involved. And your concern is that, uh-oh, vaccines aren't being given? Obviously, it's from the mainstream media. That's why. If you were real journalists, you would hone in on the most important part there. Why are they concerned about honesty? What are the doctors concerned? What do they know that, obviously, what we just found out, that they are being misled? Right. So if this person with their tweet on their phone is more informed about the concerns about this injection than the doctor administering it, they're quickly going, OK, wait a minute. How am I not seeing that information? One, that means that the people I'm supposed to trust are not telling me this stuff. And this guy on Twitter citing a scientific study that I've never even heard of is more informed. Right. I mean, this is the interesting part of all this. And these doctors are going, screw that. I am done with this. I am not going to be a part of this. I am not going to play a role because I am being misled. Or, you know, you take it for what you will. But their concern is, uh-oh, vaccines aren't happening then.
Not to overstate and to fearmonger, because we will find ways around it. But we are there. Doctors are going to say, no, you do it. We're not going to do it anymore.
Which is good, because that means then they have to be responsible for the actions they're taking, right? But yeah, we'll find ways around it. Let me play the beginning again.
I mean, to have a scenario where you've got patients coming in going, hi, doctor, here's a tweet saying the messaging's changed and you're about to give a jab, that to me, I find towards the upper end of astonishing.
Absolutely. And all of the patients who said, I'm going to wait for a Pfizer. And
so again, just the point there is the breakdown of information, an intentional breakdown. How is it possible that we can know what's going on and these doctors are left out of the loop? It is astonishing. It's astonishing. And it shows you something you cannot skip over. The fact that they are controlling this to such a degree that they're hiding it from the very experts making the medical decisions that are keeping you, or, you know, arguably in the interest of keeping you safe. That, again, this is the point of everything around COVID. They're doing very, very dangerous things under the argument that it's for your safety. It is the upper level of astonishing.
And we GPs would go, no point waiting. It's not going to happen. The only one you can have is the AstraZeneca. Let me give that to you. Well, it turns out we were wrong. They were right. And all of those people who were vaccine hesitant are now like looking really, really smart. And all the people who did the right thing and went to go and get the vaccine earlier look like they were being really, really silly. And that
because they were being really, really silly. Right? They were. That's the point. They were blindly trusting about something that historically speaking is very stupid to trust. But as I said, funny how that works out. Regardless, those wanting to continue blindly trusting these historic liars, you know, will simply claim it was merely a coincidence, right? It just so happened that the conspiracy theorists were right, but not because of what they thought, right? Either way, the takeaway is always, it should always be your choice, your choice. That's what they are taking from you, among many other things, your choice to say no. Right. But you were right in this case, which by the way, but the problem is that we can't take a step back and go, OK, even if you believe that they just made a mistake, can that not happen again? always. And this is the first vindicating obvious moment or in regard to people in this specific, there's been 1,000 vindicating moments so far, but they're showing you that even from a genuine or a random mistake or whatever you want to call it, that you were right, that choosing not to do this based on everything else we showed you was the right move. And your government and the media were screaming that you were crazy and stupid and wrong. Yet we're going to get pushed still from this point forward. It doesn't matter. Because they're part of a narrative. It's part of an agenda. Now, there's a part about a mask I wanted to squeeze in here that I thought was really telling. And because all this is discussing about the lies, about how they're misrepresenting what's going on and hiding that from you. Well, falsely informing people that, I mean, I do believe there are some doctors that are just trusting of this and they believe that they're getting the right information. This is from Dr. Vernon Coleman, medical doctor. It says, India's black fungus scare is caused by mask wearing. That doesn't surprise me at all. That's his opinion, but I think it's absolutely sound. He says doctors and journalists all over the world are creating panic over the fungal infections currently alleged to be affecting people in India. We already talked about this, and masks was one of the main things I talked about. It is claimed by some that the fungal infections are new symptoms of COVID-19. We also touched on the idea that these vaccines, injections are utilizing the weird fungal properties of different things. So I thought maybe there was some kind of vaccine connection. But realistically, the mask made the most sense in regard to what they're creating. It says, I believe this is yet more scaremongering designed to encourage people to accept one of the experimental pseudo-vaccines. The alleged epidemic of fungal infections is caused by mask wearing. The problem is particularly prevalent in India, where poor people cannot afford to buy new masks on a regular basis. Thus, the same mask is being worn again and again. Disgusting. Also, the hot weather, which increases sweating, exacerbates fungal infections in those wearing face masks. Now, there's so much information we've covered on this. All the links will be in the show notes from all the previous mask discussions. Here's just a quick glimpse. You know, India's black fungus outbreak, recovering COVID patients grapple with it. This is the problem. No one's proven this is tied to COVID-19. They just, in the headline, just makes that argument because that's what the narrative is. In the wake of India's COVID crisis, a black fungus epidemic follows. Black fungus infections exacerbated by crowded hospitals, lack of oxygen. Yeah, it's obvious this is something coming. I mean, it makes the most sense out of anything we're staring at here. It says, I warned that this would happen 9 months ago, as did I, by the way. Fungi love dark, moist areas. That's why fungi can grow in damp houses, particularly in bathrooms. Fungal infections grow in skin folds where there is little light, but a good deal of moisture. Mushrooms grow in moist areas. Your mask is exactly that. The authorities don't like to admit it, but the fungal infections now affecting so many people are caused by the masks they're wearing. And of course, masks are damaging immune systems, which increases susceptibility to all types of infection, bacterial and fungal. And remember, the flu injection has been shown to increase other infections by 36%, according to the Pentagon. Added to this, lockdowns and the COVID vaccine may also damage the immune system, leaving people susceptible to fungal infections and complications caused by fungal infections. And he goes on to talk about more stuff. Dr. Vernon Cole, as much as they've made him out to be some kind of fringe conspiracy theorist, he's an expert doctor, very sound. Pay attention. And I wanted to include this before we jump over to the next topic, just in case it gets missed. Don't forget, we just talked about this Journal of Infection, very clearly finding this another study finding the PCR test is not the right tool. In the light of our findings that more than half of individuals with positive PCR tests are likely unlikely to have been infectious, PCR test positivity should not be taken as an accurate measure of infectious SARS-CoV-2 incidence. Our results confirm the findings of others. So there's other studies that have already found this, that the routine use of positive PCR tests as a gold standard for controlling infections just fails to reflect the fact that 50 to 75% of the time an individual is PCR positive, they're likely to be post-infectious or just false. I mean, we've shown you this. It doesn't matter the point. And they go, of course, they're exactly what we're talking about. The cycle threshold, just so you know, the very tool they're using to claim that we have all the people that are sick is false. It is not accurate in the context of what they're using it for, as Carrie Mullis and plenty of others have said, the inventor of the test itself. Very important to include as this complete illusion continues to fall apart. Now, on to some quick points here. See where we are. We're looking good. Quick points here in regard to the vaccine and what we're seeing here. This is a tweet from somebody that they just shared this. What's interesting is the tweet's now gone. A week ago today, my brother's 13-year-old son had his second COVID shot. Less than 3 days later, he died. Now she goes on in the tweet, which is now gone. Looks like she probably deleted it, honestly. Oh, that's why that was there. She goes on to later argue that they should still be injected. And I think that's why it was deleted, because people were going after her for it. Here's the actual tweet. Luckily enough, I screenshotted it because I know how often these things get deleted. She says, Tammy Burgess, a week ago today, my brother's 13-year-old son had his second COVID shot. Less than 3 days later, he died. The initial autopsy results done Friday were that his heart was enlarged and there was some fluid surrounding it. He had no known health problems, that was on no medications. Includes the, vaccination record for Jacob Slinick. And this person says, I'm so very sorry for your devastating loss. My eldest granddaughter is 12 and is about to have her second vaccination. I plan to take her to hang out with me for a couple of weeks. Now I'm worried. And by the way, I saw this while it was live. Here's what Tammy says. I would definitely still get her vaccinated. This is the person who just said that her brother's son died 3 days after getting the injection. She says, if hadn't already vaccinated my 14-year-old, I would still do it. But especially for boys, I would monitor heart rate very frequently for the following week. I would even get up in the middle of the night to do it. You know why this makes sense to her? Because she has been so outrageously hyped up with false fear about what we're dealing with. To such a degree, such irrational fear that she's going, but of course, because this is COVID, it's so dangerous that we got to make sure that the risk of that is, you've got to watch for it. You're literally saying that the risk that it's killed your brother's son is okay. You just got to watch for it, because this is what irrational propaganda does to people. Think about how crazy that is. Here is the son. Just so you confirm this for yourself. He's dead. It's very, very sad. This is what happens when children are forced into something that they shouldn't be doing for a government agenda. Here, as it continues, latest CDC VAERS data, Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, the official reporting system that the CDC manages, 12 to 17-year-olds include 7 deaths, 271 serious adverse events following COVID vaccinations. Now, remember, the VAERS is something that has to be confirmed, which the CDC is choosing not to do. VAERS data released today by the CDC showed a total of 358,739 reports of adverse events from all age groups following COVID injections, including 5,993 deaths, 29,871 serious injuries between December 14, 2020 and June 11, 2021. That's a lot. Remember, we're now probably over, I don't want to guess, we're over 20% of the entire VAERS system of just COVID injections. The VAERS system has been around since the 90s. I believe it was the 90s, if not the, I'm pretty sure, just trying to remember the graph I saw in my head. I believe it was 90s, if not the early 2000s. Point being, the entire system right now is clogged with 20% or more of all COVID events, 20% of the whole system. Yet we're pretending like it's just not there. Exclusive, athlete who recovered from COVID facing, quote, very different future after second dose of Pfizer vaccine triggers myocarditis. Says in an interview with the Defender, Mary Fulmer said no one warned her that her 19-year-old son, a healthy athlete, elite athlete who had recovered from COVID. So the point was, he didn't need this because he already had natural antibodies, according to their own narrative, shouldn't get the Pfizer vaccine because it would put him at greater risk of developing myocarditis. So that's why they failed at informed consent, because they didn't even let her know that was possible. Now, had she cared to listen to independent media, or not cared, but had she been known about what we've been talking about, knowing that this was being discussed, right, she might have known. But the mainstream media is failing these people, or in fact, doing what they're paid to do, which is to fail these people. And this is what happens to her elite athlete son. Grayson has played some sports since 4 years old. He was an athlete who played the state soccer championship in high school and then went on to OSU, started college during the COVID pandemic. He also joined ROTC his freshman year and was very active, running several miles every day with heavy packs on his back. Grayson received his first dose, Pfizer, on April 16th, second dose the 7th of May. After the first dose, minor symptoms. And it says the mom didn't connect with the injection. It was after his second dose that things really changed. Grayson experienced significant symptoms shortly after his second dose. 3 times he was taken to the hospital. Children's Emergency Hospital. Quote, my son feels like he's having a heart attack 24/7. He now has high blood pressure, severe chest pains, back pain, elevated kidney levels, hypothyroidism, inflamed lymph nodes, and different areas of his body, and in different areas of body, and we can't work or exercise. Now, I'm sure you could guess where this goes. We don't know for sure. It hasn't been confirmed. As every single time. We don't know. We don't know for sure. It naturally happens in kids' age. We don't know for sure. Every single time. Which is what I said before. Yes, the Bayer system is unconfirmed because they're choosing not to confirm it. There's plenty of people, defenders already spoken to people that say they've reached out after their son or their daughter died and have never heard back from Bayer's. This is being obfuscated, and it should upset us all that people like this are being put in positions of danger for an agenda that is just couldn't be more obvious. Here's a horrible one. Teen who had a heart attack after Pfizer vaccine. He said, quote, I'd rather have COVID. And, you know, how often is it an 18-year-old football player has a heart attack? Right? How about the Olympic athlete who had a heart attack? How about the soccer player who had a heart attack? How about the tennis player who had a heart attack? All these people that are having sudden heart attacks in the prime of their, yeah, right. But that's just, nah, like somebody pointed out. You know what? Maybe I'm crazy, but does anybody remember the last time an athlete had a heart attack in the middle of playing on a live displayed game? Yeah, I can't either. But let's pretend like we can just dismiss it all because it hasn't been proven. We don't know for sure. His father and him described how Isaiah had to be hospitalized within 48 hours of his second dose of the Pfizer vaccine and subsequently had a heart attack. Actually, I think I missed something down here further. No, I guess not. There was a part that I didn't read. Oh, I guess I did read it. I just want the part that her son feels like he's having a heart attack 24/7. I just think that is so crazy. I just remembered that in my mind because we're talking about a heart attack here. I mean, this is what's happening. An 18-year-old kid has a heart attack after the Pfizer vaccine, and we're pretending like this isn't happening. This was really unnerving to me. Juliet, on her own account, goes on Twitter, wants to share with the world. I don't want to live anymore after being vaccinated with AstraZeneca. I can no longer see properly, and life as I knew it is over. May 30th, right? This is Juliet on Twitter on May 30th. AstraZeneca, God knows how they sussed this out. I'm sure they're probably just searching their name on Twitter and just doing whatever. I mean, this is damage control. They respond to her saying, while we are not permitted to discuss this topic on social media, we encourage you to report any adverse events to our website. What a cold, despicable response to somebody who's literally claiming that their life has been destroyed by this company. She follows up and says, you need to discuss it in social media. Your vaccine destroyed my vision. I need more than to just report it. I need answers. Why did you tell me it was safe? To which they don't respond. Think about that. It just makes you sick, doesn't it? Now ask yourself why they feel the need. Now somebody in here at the bottom says, now think about this. This is a company that has indemnity. They don't have any legal responsibility for these things that are happening. Yet they're following up on here and saying, hey, report this. There's something inherently wrong about that, especially with somebody with such a serious problem. And all you're saying is go over here and say what you say, so we can then dismiss it and say, we don't know for sure. Is that proven? Here's what they actually linked to. Oh, actually, hold on. I think I got rid of that. Maybe. No, I guess I did. That's weird. What? Okay. That's really strange. I opened this. That is crazy. I had this open a moment ago, and I saw the page and everything. And it's really weird. The AstraZeneca page looks pretty. It's funky, and it talks about there was a connection to what we were talking about here. How strange. Is it the homepage? I don't know. That is strange. Anyway, well, I was going to show you something. Looks like this, maybe I did something wrong. Maybe it changed. I definitely clicked this link. The point was there was a page they had here specifically about I can't remember the term they used. Anyway, I'm just going to skip past it then since I can't remember. But nonetheless, it's very alarming that they're talking about this in the way that they are and the way that they're responding. It just makes it, it's really unnerving to see how they're going forward. Meanwhile, we are seeing jobs or, you know, employers suddenly kind of waffling about this right now, about the mandating stuff, because why? Well, the emergency use authorization. That's exactly the point. And what they're saying is emergency virus vaccine approval adds more risk to job, not more risk. It means it's illegal. How incredible is it that even this Bloomberg Law article is like, well, it's risky. Yeah, you know why it's risky? Because it's a crime. And you should know that if you're actually an honest law reporting site. But what's funny is the majority right now, apparently these businesses are going, well, I don't know. I don't want to put myself in a legal position. You know why they're saying that? Because their legal groups are saying, guys, this is a finicky position because the law is pretty clear. It doesn't matter that the media is saying it's okay or the government's saying it's okay. Here's the law. And it's pretty obviously a crime. You cannot mandate an experimental, unapproved anything. So it just shows you that they're trying to force this in a very clumsy way. And even the people that are giving approval to do it are going, I don't know. This is the majority showing its face. Here's Bruce Bard. I'm just going to include this because he's pointing out that apparently there's a lot of places that are suing. And I think it's good to follow up on this and show you what's going on. I mean, it goes on for, he's talking about a whole bunch of cases across the United States of suing about this mandate. I think it's great. Now, a lot of being dismissed, but it's happening. I think people are pushing back. But remember, it's not just the United States we're talking about here. This is a worldwide effort. Russian ex-president says, quote, mandatory vaccinations could be in interest of national security, health of whole population, right? Now, whether or not that happens, the point is there's a sentiment in Russia that this should be forced on people. Right now, the Philippine president just said, quote, you choose COVID vaccine or I will have you jailed. Typical from him. Mr. Duterte, always with his extreme clay. I think he just likes being in the media. But in any case, they're going to force it because they can. And your government doesn't care about that, even though it's an obvious crime against humanity. It's a international law. It's a crime, period. That's why they're waffling about it, pretending to anyway. But it's happening. It's one step away from coming to your door. And here is forced vaccination on video happening in India. And this is an alarming thing to see, guys. It really is. This is some alarming stuff. And it's not this. This is something that we need to see and understand that this is something that your government is okay with, that the media is okay with. In the interest of time, I'm just going to skip to the part where it shows. So she's running from them, right? You can see the officials in the door. She runs outside. They chase her down.
Madam,
do you hear them laughing? They're laughing. So it's obvious you can see what's happening right there. You can see them trying or doing it. Oops.
Madam, auntie, don't. Oh, sorry, give it to me.
Right there. Just in case you missed it. It's just incredible to me that this is even being allowed anywhere. But there's no possible scenario where any of that is acceptable. This is they pretend like they care about these things, and they use situations like this and other places to abuse or you know, carry out experiments, however you want to look at this. Somebody's being forced on the ground, injected. Right there in her hand. So what happens if one of those people die? What happens if one of them have a, let me look, how about this? How about nothing happens to anybody, but one of these people has a wildly rare, only one person in the world gets it, and they have some, you know, Bell's palsy for the rest of their life or whatever. What happens then? Right? Who's responsible for that? I don't care if it's totally rare or not. You're being forced something that then has a dangerous effect. Something happens to you. We're clearly seeing something. They're admitting rare this and rare that. So how can you possibly force this on somebody with any risk? It's a crime, guys. This is a crime. I'm going to leave it there. It's just so incredible to me. Forced vaccination in India. No outcry from the mainstream media about this egregious violation of human rights. Gee, I wonder why. I'll include this for you, so you can watch it yourself. I'll also include the thread here where Rita here goes over the whole thing, including the discussion about what they're claiming they can use to force these things and making the point that the 1897 Act actually doesn't give it what they say they do, and they're twisting the information to force injections on people and on and on and on. And how they're using these things called vaccination ambulances to basically, you know, do exactly what you just saw, to come up on people, force them in, force inject them. And it's very clear. There's stuff all over social media. Nobody cares about this because that's what they want to happen, guys. Door-to-door COVID-19 vaccinations available to Yolo County residents 12 and older, door-to-door, right? Oh, but they're just coming to ask if you can help, right? Yeah, of course, it's always how it feels, right? We just showed you the door to the people going door-to-door in India in a previous video, right? People are being forced around the world right now, and now we're suddenly seeing door-to-door vaccinations begin to happen. What about whether they don't force you? How about they just politically manipulate? Make you feel like you have to tell you that there's restriction. I mean, this is going to your door. That is a violation of your privacy. This is coercive to a degree that I've never seen before in this for 12-year-olds. We just showed you the information. The WHO telling you not to vaccinate them. And here we are going door to door. Lastly, on this part of it, Great Game India points out something I found very, very revealing. Now, as always, you should look at this information. Don't jump to conclusions. Think it through. Stand back and look at the bigger picture. This could mean everything, or it could be something that could be categorized as whatever the hell they were doing all the time before this, which is not very secret. Sort of like that thing we're seeing now where, oh no, Google and so-and-so paid Eagle Health Alliance to work at the Wuhan lab. And it's like, okay. I mean, Google paying, I mean, that's an interesting part of that, but this is all public information. This was not secret. It's only big and weird and contentious now that we know the dangerous things that were happening there. Eco Health Alliance, NIH, NIAID, with, you know, North Carolina, this was all publicly being done because the discussion wasn't they're doing dangerous things over there. We're keeping you safe, right? So this breaking news, it's something that we all could have just looked up online. It's not that big. It's interesting. Now this could fall into that category, And you'll see what I mean. But I think there's more to this because of the timing. Secret docs reveal Moderna sent coronavirus vaccine. Remember, that just means coronavirus, not necessarily SARS-CoV-2, to North Carolina University weeks before the pandemic. A confidentiality agreement, which I have included here. Here's the PDF itself, which, by the way, you'll find quite telling. Here's NIAID, right? And you can find what I find the most telling about this specifically is the signatures. And you'll see it for yourself. I mean, they're actually written. You can see it. I mean, this is like a scan. The point is, these are the signatures of a lot of very prominent people. And you can look at them and double check them and cross-reference them for yourself. I mean, look, there's a lot of people signed on this. So that's an interesting thing. So if this does come back to play into something important, these people's names are on there. This wasn't meant to be seen. It says a confidentiality agreement shows potential coronavirus vaccine candidates were transferred from Moderna to the University of North Carolina in 2019. Remember, this is the university where the material came, where that they used to execute their research in Wuhan. That was executed with Equal Health Alliance, Peter Daszak, and all the whole thing we've talked about. But what's interesting is that Moderna, the vaccine company, sends a coronavirus vaccine to North Carolina weeks before this all began. 19 days, in fact, prior to the official emergence of COVID-19. Now, it says the confidentiality agreement states that providers Moderna, alongside NIAID, which is Fauci, agreed to transfer, quote, mRNA vaccine, coronavirus vaccine candidates, which, remember, they were working on mRNA before this all came around, which doesn't mean it's any less telling. I'm of the mind that this is all part of the same thing, by the way, just so you know, that everything they were working on before this is completely tied in with what's happening today. Developed and jointly owned by NIAID and Moderna to recipients, quote, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Well, we all heard that on the 12th December, 2019. The material transfer agreement was signed on December 12th, 2019 by Ralph Barrick, PhD. We've talked about all these people, all this discussion at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and then signed by Jacqueline Quay, Director of Licensing and Innovation Support at the University of North Carolina, December 16th, 2019. The agreement was also signed by two representatives of NIAID, one of whom was F. Petrick, PhD, a technology transfer specialist who signed the agreement December 12th. The other signatory, Barney Graham, MD, PhD, investigator for NIH. It says all of these signatures were made prior to any knowledge of the emergence of novel coronavirus. Wasn't until December 31st that we first heard the discussion, right? Now it says, so why, or the official WHO part of it. So why was the mRNA coronavirus vaccine candidate developed by Moderna being transferred to the University of North Carolina on December 12th, 2019, right? As they said, would they like to talk about this in a court of law? I'd love to hear it. But I'm sure the argument will simply be that, not that it's true, that they were working on these things for a long time before this, which they were, which doesn't mean it's any less relevant to what's going on today, being mRNA, and the discussion being that they were, you know, what's telling is that this was being shipped off to the very location that the material came from by Moderna, of all people. Why North Carolina? Like, North Carolina, interesting development here that needs to be fleshed out more. I do think this means something. I think we're seeing more of the connection about what was really going on, whether this is some kind of a tool or whether they were, you know, testing to make sure this was something that we, you know, think about like this. Maybe they sent it back to North Carolina to say, is this what we accidentally released? Right? Can you check to make sure that this is what we're talking about? Right? Is this the material? Is what we're making it for? I mean, there's a lot of possibilities here. Either way you look at it, there's so much around this story that we're being lied to about. Look at it for yourself. Now, on the variant discussion, which is being used to continually scaremonger about things that aren't really there, in my opinion, here's the Irish Times. Latest COVID-19 figures show a concerning increase in transmission of the Delta variant in Ireland, right? Oh my gosh, and this is why the UK is keeping them locked down and all the Delta variant, which, by the way, the most you can say is that we don't know. It could be more dangerous. Well, so could anything. Tomorrow, we could all die. Who knows? Maybe we should all lock down until tomorrow because we could die tomorrow, right? There's no reason, based on their data, which is what everyone's saying, that this should stay just for the fear, which means they could always say that. Every single day, there could be a possible thing tomorrow. So this is your new normal. This is what we keep telling you. It's all fear-mongering. As they say, the Delta variant now accounts for 20% of the COVID cases. It's all, we're all in danger, right? Well, here's Another discussion, and this is even independent media, by the way. We can't let it get the upper hand. Delta variant threatens to derail Europe's COVID recovery. Why? Well, because it could. Does it threaten to derail anything? Well, we don't know, but it could. I'm not even kidding. This is the gist of the argument, that it could be bad and it might derail it if we dwell. Oh, we're in a lockdown. Even lockdown is doing far more damage than anything we've ever done. But let's do that for something we don't know is dangerous, right? This is fantastic. Dr. Simon, PhD, points this out. Just a quick note. This is me. This is the media reporting on the Delta variant. That is just fantastic. Great. Great. No throttling happening here. God, I love that. I mean, that is just the best. I want to cut that and use that anytime I talk about the mainstream media. It's just exactly what's happening. Whoa, Delta variant. Let me just scream. It's just so perfect. They're all just mindlessly parodying the danger. It's so funny to me. And he's exactly right. It's exactly what's happening. It just kills me. Oh, I think there you go. And to the point, he's absolutely right. Ivor Cummings points this out. This is Christopher Snowden pointing this out, who is the, I guess, I'm not sure. Of course, views are his own. I don't understand that, guys. Whose else would they be? It says the number of cases quadrupled between May 1st and June 7th, but this has had only a very small effect on hospital capacity, let alone mortality. The jury's in. The vaccines work, and we should have fully reopened today, which I disagree with, by the way. His argument is vaccines work, which I don't know why you would assume that if less than the majority has been vaccinated or injected, and the decline was beginning long before the injection started, that would somehow equal vaccines work. That's just a choice to be like, look, it worked, even though nothing adds up to it worked. In fact, it adds up to the natural decline was already beginning, and we see a spike after the injection, which then tapered back down, which we can show over and over and over. But the point is, what the video here is that Ivor is playing, which shows you how insultingly wrong this is. That the variant is even something we should be concerned about, that the variant is even different. A lot of things.
Okay, guys, crucial update on this variant thing. So, Delta variant, is it different from the Indian variant? Everyone's confused. Well, actually, the Delta variant is the Indian variant. It was just rebadged.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Like everything else, like, oh, that's not ISIS anymore. That's a new group we call something else. Now we're good guys. That's classic US government propaganda.
Now, this report just came out. Here's the data on the variants. And we see the purple here is the Delta or Indian variant. And we see from early April, it has absolutely dominated all the cases in the UK.
Now, we should be clear that this is just what we're being told. That's always the argument here. We're operating from within their narrative. They're claiming this is the case, right? I'm not saying this, just that's, they're claiming this is the case. And when you add the other data, it shows you that even within their narrative, they're being caught in a lie.
So it was 10% already in mid-April. It was 50% of the cases in early May and 75% by mid-May. And now it's pretty much nearly all of them, 90%. So if this is a problematic, dangerous variant, it would already have caused in the past month or two enormous impacts.
Exactly. Right?
Well, let's look. Here's government data just taken. Goes right up to 17th of June. You can look it up. This is all government data. And you can see the hospitalization impact. We'll add in a green trend line we're going to use.
And by the way, this is what you get when you really truncate this, when you jam it together, right? If you break this down a little bit and spread out, not just January 1st to March 1st, right? Like actually spread this out, you will see a correlating spike along with the injection, as well as one after the lockdown. You'll see that almost every place you look, you will see an increase after the injections begin, and you'll see an increase after lockdowns began. But what you notice is that January 1st, basically down, it was already tapering down long before. I mean, look, even if you argue, so what? So they're saying, oh, January is when vaccines began. Okay. So are we really going to pretend like we saw an exponential decrease with far, far, far less than even close to a majority being vaccinated? Your argument is that herd immunity has to be reached before that even starts, right? So it's obvious they're just taking what they can get. Vaccine had nothing to do with what we're looking at. In fact, I argue made it worse. That's why we can see the spike, but that's irrelevant. What they're showing you here is that the decrease happened while they're claiming the increase in the variant was exploding. So that then shows you one of two things. Either the variant discussion is a complete fabrication or it's not dangerous at all. Either one, they don't care about.
Use this in a moment and we'll superimpose it over the variant graph. So back to our variant graph. Purple is the Delta or Indian variant, and it's obviously taken over the past couple of months in the UK. And we'll add in our hospitalization real-world impact of SARS-CoV-2. And here's the line. And you'll notice that as this variant took over completely over a couple of months, effectively nothing happened to real-world impact or hospitalizations.
Now, why would they even change the name? Like, think about that, right? What's the point of that? They want you to think these are different things. That's about making it seem prolific. Yet another deception.
And this is clear as day. And be under no mistake, guys. This is not a projection. It's not modeling. It's not hypothesizing.
Exactly.
It's not estimating. This is a de facto proof, an empirical proof, that the variant doesn't add up to anything much at all in terms of real world impact. So there you go. Now you know. So deadly variants or political scariants, which is it? Well, it ain't deadly variants. We know that. We have proof of that now. So it's political scariants. And all this stuff you saw to take away your freedoms, well, that was political scariant mongering.
And also think about this in the context of India, right? Remember what we just talked about? The point that the vast majority of India had herd immunity, according to their own scientists, because they dealt with this before, and yet they forced the injection on them. So what exactly caused what we saw in this big spike of deaths and whatever else? Well, it was being timed perfectly with the administration of the injection. So if they all had herd immunity, which, by the way, even our own research has shown in this country that the majority of uninfected people had it from beforehand, which I've shown you more than once. And that, I mean, that's a very important one to understand, because that shows you how obviously deceptive this is. I mean, if we can have uninfected people with natural immunity, right? Which, as you can see, put this back real quick. As you can see here, the study I've shown you before, that a majority of uninfected adults already showed pre-existing antibody activity, reactivity. Now, the point was, if we're showing you that the natural has lasting probably the rest of your life, according to nature, according to a lot of studies, and this is showing you that the study showed that most people, whether uninfected or not, already had pre-existing antibodies, it just, none of this makes any sense. You begin to see the illusion more so than ever before. And what he's showing you here at the end is that it's pretty interesting that the Indian discussion happened with the injection. It seems to suggest that there was something else causing all these deaths, right? You think into that for however you see fit. But what we know here, based on the information, is it definitely wasn't this variant that's the data showing is not even dangerous. Isn't that interesting, right? Move this here so I don't forget. Finally, with a passing 2 hours here almost, let's kind of just finish off with the nanobot Great Reset technocratic future direction here. Now, somebody just share this with me. Human augmentation, the dawn of a new paradigm. Now, is that because you want that? Did we vote for that? Wait, who's deciding this new paradigm, right? People like the World Economic Forum. That's like the clip that I showed you right in the beginning. They've already decided this is your future.
What the fourth industrial revolution will lead to is a fusion of our physical, our digital, and our biological identities. When I wrote the book, I started to write it four years ago.
Wall Street and biotechnology companies have been very excited about this idea. And what essentially it is trying to hack the cells in the body in order to make them into drug factories.
Oops, sorry. I wasn't supposed to play the intro part. I just want to play that clip again, right? I mean, they have already decided this is your future. They're already doing this. They're already making this. This is your new paradigm. 2030, you'll own nothing and you've never been happier, right? This is the illusion of some sort of like a representative government or direction is just so childish today. I mean, do we vote for, I mean, every single major direction change has been based off of some catalyst event like 9/11, Pearl Harbor. It's the same things they're doing. And they always point forward and say, we need another one of those, like Trump did during his administration. We need another catalyzing event like 9/11. Oh, look at what just happened. Weird. It's almost like he knew that COVID-19 would happen and we told it would. And this is the event they're using to transition yet again, just like every other situation we've talked about. It's a point is that they don't need your permission. They need you to think that you're giving permission. They need you to think that you've given it or that it's your choice. And that's all they need. They are creating this new paradigm. It's actually, in fact, it's already begun and it's happening around you right now. Nis says the project incorporates research from German, Swedish, Finnish, and UK defense specialists to understand how emerging technologies such as genetic engineering, bioinformatics, and the possibility of brain-computer interfaces could affect the future of society, security, and defense. The ethical, moral, and legal challenges are complex and must be thoroughly considered, but HA, human augmentation, could signal the coming of a new era of strategic advantage with possible implications across the force development spectrum. Now, what is the force development spectrum? I'm not even sure exactly. Possible implications across the force development spectrum. I mean, you probably based on that paragraph, you could argue it's something military, but I don't think so. The force development spectrum. I'm probably going to follow up on that. Now it says there are mature technologies, excuse me, that could be integrated today, not tomorrow, today, with manageable policy considerations. So even as they frame this as some kind of like future distant that they always do, they're saying right this moment, we could do these things with manageable policy considerations, such as personalized nutrition. Yeah, for you, right? Because you're being decided for wearables and exoskeletons. Wearables. You mean that fake news discussion? It's not even happening. Yeah, it's already right there. It's happening in real time. Here's AstraZeneca. Oh, that's what it was. See, I always do that. That's what I was. This was the link I was confusing it with. That's why. Okay. That makes more sense. The other AstraZeneca tweet. Okay. So here's AstraZeneca saying digital therapeutics is where health and technology merge and augment traditional medicines, right? So the whole concept of the COVID-19 transition from the vaccine over to wearables and implantables, all that is totally fake news in any kind of mainstream discussion. But here's one of those vaccine companies straight up telling you that that's where this is going. And we're merging this kind of thing with traditional what's a traditional? Well, the vaccine, of course. In R&D, we aim to harness the potential of digital therapeutics to improve patient outcomes. Yes, that's this is the absurd nature of what is right now fake news is also being discussed by DARPA, by AstraZeneca, by Pfizer, by your government, by the DOD, by everybody. But it's fake news, though, on Twitter and the mainstream media. Because they know that those people that are only listening to them have no idea what's going on outside of their circle. They don't look at what the DOD is saying. They don't research what DARPA is researching. They don't check out what they're saying. They just go along with what they're being told. And if they happen to catch one of these, they go, oh, they're just loftily thinking into the future because government good and they can love us and keep us safe. But that's not what's happening at all. In fact, like as I said, they are changing your future without your consent. Personalized nutrition, wearables, and exoskeletons. There are other technologies in the future with promises of bigger potential, such as genetic engineering and brain-computer interfaces. And for the second time, they say the ethical, moral, and legal implications of this are hard to foresee, but early and regular engagement with these issues lie at the heart of success. So what I love is they keep doing that. Well, we need to consider these things, thoroughly considered, but it could signal the coming of an era. Right. We should consider these things, but here's how we're planning it already. Human augmentation will become increasingly relevant in the future because it is the binding agent between unique skills of humans and machines. Wait a minute. Didn't you just say that these ethical and moral legal implications are hard to foresee, but regular? Okay. So you don't know what might happen. You're up here saying we need to consider this, but down here, you're going, but you already know this is going to be a part of our future. So they are, whether or not they figure out those weird issues of moral and ethical problems, this is already being implemented. We're already laying the groundwork and maybe we'll figure out those ethical problems, but we probably don't care about them as the reality. It says the winners of future wars Of course, that's where this all plays into, right? Will not be those with the most advanced technology, but those who most effectively integrate the unique skills of both human and machine. So the only way we're going to fight off the bad guys that are trying to kill us all for our freedom is by integrating machines with our bodies. Let's not mince. That's exactly what that is saying. Maybe they're talking about only military. Maybe not. You decide, show your own discernment. But what they're telling you is the winners of the future wars, as in tomorrow, will be the people who effectively integrate unique skills of both machine and human. That really couldn't be any more clear. That's your future. Just like Klaus Schwab is telling you. By the way, he's telling you that's happening now, by the way. Here they're pretending this lofty direction forward. Klaus Schwab is talking about right now. We are in the four. That's what they're talking about. That's the Great Reset. That's what's happening. That's why they're already stepping into the remember, the wearables. Well, I mean, we're looking, I believe that's a Perfusa one that he has on his arm right there, which, by the way, is an injectable chip. Uh-oh, fake news, right? Perfusa, look, it's very simple. We've talked about it before. I mean, I actually had it up for a second earlier. I was looking at it. Perfusa, injectable body sensors. Uh-oh, fake news, right? Fake news. It's not real. Look at it for yourself. You know, it's always good to have the information, right? You plant under your skin and that thing senses it on the top, blah, 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 right? We've talked about all this. The point is that this is already happening. They're already stepping into the direction of these therapeutics, these biosensors, and it's just a simple step in the direction. Next it'll be something implantable. Next it'll be something in your skin, more so in your skin. They actually call these implantables minimally invasive, even though it goes under your skin. If you just talk about an implantable biosensor for vaccine technology, they will laugh and call you a conspiracy theorist on Twitter. That's how stupid this is. Here is how the international world will change for your travel, utilizing things like these biosensors. Oh, that's right. This is where that page was. Just to show you the AstraZeneca page, digital therapeutics, augmenting patient health outcomes, right? Human augmentation. This is where we are. It's all coming together. It's not an accident. This is what they're aiming for, guys. This is their future. Those will be utilized in this process. When international travel resumes, Canada's borders and airports will be very different. Now imagine the next step from making that thing something that only talks about one process to this being a one-stop shop for your digital passport, right? Sure, it can manage your injection, but it can also make sure your biometrics are okay, make sure your heart rate is fine, make sure it lets you know when you're too close to someone who might be sick. It engages with the mesh system of the new Great Reset, so we can now know if blah, 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 blah. All right, we can see how this works, and that's not far-fetched. And this is how they frame it. From the CBC, as of June 12th, 2021, as I was just talking about, your catalyzing event, just as the 9/11 attacks did 20 years ago, the COVID-19 pandemic will transform the way people travel internationally. Why? Well, because they're doing that. Do we need to do that? No, we don't. Especially if the risk is no different, if we can simply implement personal safety and say, here's what we think you should do, it's on you as a human being. Well, nothing has to change. The only reason it's changing is because they want it to change. This is the direction into the biosecurity state from the security state that was established after 9/11 false flag. We are driving in this direction. And it's being rationalized by the latest catalyzing event, COVID-19 illusion. And it will transform the way that people travel internationally with hundreds of millions of dollars in new government spending. A full shocking. And who spends that? You do. It's your money out of your pocket, even though you can't support your family. Plan for modernizing border security. Modernizing. We're going to reimagine everything, right? Updating public health measures at the airports. Great. So now you're going to have to wear masks. You have to be bioscanned. You're going to have these sensors we're going to talk about in a second, right? These right here. Biosensors for detectable air problems, right? This is, they're all the stuff we've been telling you about that they've been shouting down as fake news. Well, that's the future. It's what they're building right this moment. Now, on to the discussion that we just went over the other day. Now, this is an article dismissing the concept of DNA manipulation, despite all the science we showed you the other day, which very clearly finds not only can nanoparticles themselves, but the mRNA technology, as well as lipids and the spike protein, all these things have independently shown to have effects on actually integrating with your DNA. I've gone over the scientific research from all the people they tell we're supposed to listen to, but yet this news outlet, you know, they can't figure out, I guess they couldn't find it apparently, but that's not what we're going to get into today. We want to go to the last part of this where they just casually dismiss the discussion of nanobots as if it's just so stupid and fake news, right? As it starts, it says, it's becoming increasingly common to see social media posts about vaccines, even suggest that some posts even suggest that nanomachines are being injected into the body. Now, that doesn't say that it's happening in these injections, just simply the concept that nanomachines are being injected. Is that fake news? No, it's not, in fact. It's actually been a discussion point for about 15 years, but, you know, I guess Cosmos missed that, apparently. Now, let's look at the bottom. After they just ridiculously try to dismiss the very obvious research being shown about the DNA part, it says, and what about the implication of nanomachines? What about the implication that nanomachines are included in mRNA vaccines? What more specific right there to artificially alter human DNA? Now that's, again, I made this point last time. That's just an intentional conflation of totally different discussions. Now, maybe there's somebody saying that's what they're doing, but the argument that there's nanotechnology that can do any number of things in these versus that the injection itself can alter DNA are very different. They're just mashing it together to make it look silly. That's making it look clumsy. But it says, they say, it's all to do with the misunderstanding of terms used by the size, which is a part of this. Particles could mean a small particle. It could also mean a nanotechnology, which is in fact an actual bot. It says, the origin of this concern, as circulating on social media, seems to have been in part a broader suspicion against nanotechnology. However, mRNA vaccine context, the term nano simply refers to the size of fat droplets like the mRNA encapsulated for the delivery into cells. But that arguably is not the case. Whether we're talking about this current vaccine based on what they've said up until this point, simple point, first of all, based on what they're telling you, there's nanoparticles, which is the lipid nanoparticle around this, which is not necessarily robots or nanobots. I'm not saying I can prove that. My point is the technology is there that's been framed in regard to specifically vaccines, even these mRNA vaccines for delivering drugs, which is what they call these ones, right? You'll see where I'm going with this. And I argue that this is exactly what we could be talking about. At the very least, that it's not something to dismiss as a fake news story. Now, here is an article from May 25th, 2021. Nanobots could navigate through blood vessels to target cancers and clear blood clots, right? Nanobots, tiny-sized nanorobots and vehicles that can navigate through blood vessels to reach the site of a disease could be used to deliver drugs to tumors that are otherwise difficult to treat. Now, this is the exact discussion about these exact things that were being had 5 years ago, right? More than that. So is the idea that it's impossible, first of all, that these could be there is ridiculous. But it says, if injected, once injected or swallowed, most drugs rely upon the movement of bloody fluids to find their way around the body. It means that some types of disease can be difficult to treat. Point is, nanoparticles, which is what they're calling those, which again is important because that's what they are, whether bots or not, are 10 times smaller than red blood cells. If you use a passive particle, there is no way to control them. Nano swimmers. The ability to finally control nano swimmers is necessary if the scientists want to get their drug-carrying nano vehicles to glioblastomas, which is the ultimate goal, right? Now, this is clearly the discussion of drug delivery, which was exactly what we were talking about in regard to these mRNA vaccines before we got here, the drug delivery aspect of this. Now, this is Boris Johnson, who I've played before, discussing exactly this in the revolution that we're going to have. This is December 2020, after the Great Reset.
From Star Wars Armada. Neural interface technology is producing a new generation of, like some Star Wars blood cell capable of,
yeah, I forgot to go back earlier,
revolutionizing medicine by designing robots a fraction of the size of a red blood cell capable of swimming through our bodies, dispensing medicine and attacking malignant cells like some Star Wars Armada.
Right. So he's talking about exactly what we just referenced, but not as some, I mean, look, the guy, this is written in May. This is 2021, May 25th, 2021. This is Boris Johnson saying that about what we're currently doing in December, 2020, using nanotechnology to swim through your body to deliver drugs. Listen again.
And benignly, indeed, in to serve as a liberator and to remake the world.
Oh, that's right. I want to play that part too.
Children.
Here, let's just play from the beginning.
And there are today people who are still actually anti-science. A whole movement called the anti-vaxxers.
I made fun of this last time. A whole, like, so is there some kind of like a moniker? Do they wear t-shirts? Are they all part of the group? Right? They're not calling themselves anti-vax. They're being labeled that by ignorant people like you. Just because somebody doesn't want this does not then make them anti. Look, just because someone is anti-vax doesn't make them anti-science. Like, that is an ignorant argument, and we all know that. It's being shown incredibly clear today by the fact that they're labeling PhDs in science anti-science because they don't say the right thing. Media personnel, ignorant people in the media, actually claiming PhDs are anti-science. Like, how stupid is that?
Who refuse to acknowledge the evidence that vaccinations have eradicated smallpox.
False.
And who, by their prejudices, are actually endangering the very children they want to protect.
False.
And I totally reject this anti-scientific pessimism. I'm profoundly optimistic about the ability of new technology to serve as a liberator and to remake the world wondrously and benignly.
Remake the world benignly, though, right? We're not evil. I just love that. Remake the world lovely and benignly, right? Like, that's the same as saying, we're not going to do mean things, though. We're not going to hurt you. We're not evil. We're going to remake it, but we're going to be good in a good way. Like, you wouldn't need to say that if you were good, right? You only do that when you have evil thigh. That's my opinion. But he is telling you that we're going to use this technology that he's about to list off to remake the world. What does it sound like? I don't know, altering human evolution in 20 years that they said they would do in 2002 using nanotechnology, their own documentation, and then they reiterated that in 2017. Biodigital convergence was a recent one they came out with telling you that's what they were going to do. Human augmentations being discussed right now by the UK. How do we not see where this is going? It's happening now, not tomorrow.
Indeed, in countless respects, technology is already doing just that.
Already. Nanotechnology. Already doing that.
I mentioned earlier, revolutionizing medicine by designing robots a fraction of the size of a red blood cell, capable of swimming through our bodies, dispensing medicine and attacking malignant cells like some Star Wars armada.
A tenth of the size of a red blood cell swimming through our body, delivering drugs. Now, are we really going to pretend that that's not what we're talking about?
Neural interface technology is producing a new generation of cochlear implants, I think, of new tools that we acquired, but over which we, the human race, had the advantage, which we controlled. And that is not necessarily the case in the digital age. You may keep your secrets from your friends, from your parents, your children, your doctor, even your personal trainer, but it takes real effort to conceal your thoughts from Google. And if that is true today, in future, there may be nowhere to hide. In future,
ugh.
There may be nowhere to hide. Nowhere to hide. Nowhere to hide. Nowhere to hide. Smart
cities will
populate with sensors, all joined together by the Internet of Things.
Yep.
Bollards communing invisibly.
Now, again, if he's talking about nanotechnology, right, that is connectable, which we already talked about, if as far back as 2004, the smart dust we've shown you before. If I can get this to pop up, we'll see. Let's see if not. Yep, there it is. I'll show you this again real quick since we're talking about it. Very relevant right here. Now, actually, I'll show that next. So what we're talking about here – he's saying – you know, here, let me just play it again.
By the Internet of Things. Bollards communing invisibly with lamp.
Right. So the smart dust that is connectable all the way back in 2004 via mesh and different styles of connection from body to body, from your body to some outside place, some outside device, right? This is not a secret. They're talking about that. Now you have nanotechnology in your body. Is it not possible that they could then mesh those things and connect them? An internet of things, an internet of bodies. That's exactly what they're talking about. The IOB is an open discussion in the World Economic Forum, the internet of bodies. This is not, I don't know why this is far-fetched to people when they're openly telling you this is the future.
But this technology can also be used to keep every citizen under round-the-clock surveillance. A future Alexa will pretend to take orders, but this Alexa will be watching you, clucking her tongue and stamping her foot.
Right. And that sounds great, right? This is your new future that they're all supporting. That is very alarming stuff. Well, here is this part of it. Let me get it right up cued here. I've played this a few times. This is a really important one to show. Where are we? Right here. That's where it is, right there. Okay. This is from September 18th, 2014. Okay. This is an expert on the topic speaking at a symposium about this specific topic on September 18th, 2014.
Doorway, they're going to just become invisible.
We're still essentially the banging the rocks together stage for this sort of stuff. And you haven't really seen anything yet. So this is closer to the end of the vision. This is this powder-sized chip, and that's a salt crystal. So this is a small thing. It's something called the Mu chip from Hitachi. It's the smallest commercially available RFID system in the world and can be pulse-powered by radio waves. It doesn't require a battery. You can literally scatter this stuff like dust.
So this one is – so this is interesting. The next one he talks about, it operates off of your body motion. Right? So you move and your motion keeps it going, as well as other things that can use your body to operate from. This one, he's saying it can be operated from outside your body. Like they can send, what's the term he just used?
It's the smallest, and you haven't really seen the end of the vision. This is this powder-sized chip, and that's a salt crystal. So this is a small thing. It's something called the Mu chip from Hitachi. It's the smallest commercially available RFID system in the world. And can be pulse powered by radio waves.
Pulse powered. That's so interesting. Pulse powered by radio waves, which, as we know, can go quite a long ways. So you can pulse power these things to keep them working in your body without anything else. Look at how small that is. I always misquote. I always say like an eighth. That's way smaller than an eighth. That's probably like a 1/30th of that grain of salt. That is tiny. And what he says is this is 10 years ago, right? So this is 2004. That's what they had in 2004. Jump to 2021. Can you imagine what they have right now? This is the size of dust. You could blow this into the air and it can be contacted. It can be controlled. It can mesh. It can connect outside your body. And today we're talking about things that can swim through your bloodstream, delivering drugs.
It doesn't require a battery. You can literally scatter this stuff like dust or embed it into a sheet of paper. Wow. And you know what the really interesting thing about this technology is? This was commercially released 10 years ago.
2004.
So the inevitability of smart dust. So what is smart dust? Well, smart dust, of course, isn't a new concept. It's originated with DARPA back in the 90s.
DARPA.
And it's general purpose computing, sensors, wireless networking, all bundled up into millimeter scale sensor modes.
Wireless networking, right? Where's DARPA coming up? Oh, that's right. Involved with all the vaccine discussions and all the new directions and all the biosensors, right? All the things that are fake news up until they're being pushed into your arm, right? That's what DARPA is involved in. Ask why DARPA worked on all this stuff up until COVID-19. And now they're on, like, it's clear that this is the same thing, guys. This is the direction. They've been working on this for a long time.
Drifting in the air currents, flecks of computing power settling on your skin, ingested, monitoring you inside and out. And if you don't think that's possible, this is the Michigan Micromote. It's a cubic millimeter in size. And in deference to the speaker before, yes, it runs an ARM processor. It's a tiny computer and it features data processing, data storage, wireless comms.
Wow.
And it's probably as close to the true smart dust vision from the early DARPA days as we've come so far.
Wireless comms. This is something that runs on your own body's power, right? So you've seen a lot of this, especially if you watch this show, right? So how is it that this stuff is fake? How is it this stuff is not something that we're actively discussing, as Boris talks about it, as something that's currently delivering drugs inside our new technology that we're currently using, as he discusses?
So far, humanity's rather tried to subjugate microorganisms. Researchers have already created tiny functional robots that can move around on four legs. Each of these legs is just about 100 atoms thick, but the robot has solar
panels. Now, here's what's funny. This is a mainstream version of this discussion. Now, look at what they show you. That's supposed to be a penny, right? Oh, yeah, look how tiny this tiniest little machine is, right? Well, you're lying, because we've been there for way longer than that, right? I mean, this is so insulting. This is why I'm going to show you that new chip when they made that big fake news mainstream push to be like, the new microchip, and then they swung back around and said, but it's not a microchip, you liars. That was all completely set up, in my opinion. That whole thing was way too big to be some new groundbreaking micro. Here is what we're talking about, right? This is the reality from 2004. And it is a chip. That's an actual microchip. Look at how tiny that is. That was commercially available in 2004. Are we really going to pretend like this groundbreaking new thing that's like the same, is that this way too big? This stuff they're doing now is as small, as he said, a tenth of the size of a cell of blood. That's why they're pretending the other direction now with these new videos. And look at this new clunky technology we're working on. Sort of like when the milk discussion goes forward in time, it becomes more convoluted, not better. The further back you go, the more you find out, hey, milk doesn't help you at all, right? It's because we're leading into this very alarming direction where people in authority are not your friends. And they have actively been obfuscating, hiding, lying, they're deceitful. They are cheating you from your life right now. So I don't know why we wouldn't consider whether people that have admitted in the past to testing 239 times on unwitting Americans and people abroad with chemicals and biological agents, why we wouldn't ask the question of whether that's happening again now. I think it's a very obvious question to ask, that this is exactly what's happening.
Atoms thick, but the robot has solar panels instead of batteries and can potentially move inside the human body where no tweezers or scalpel can reach. In short, people are almost ready to send their Terminator into the microcosm.
You're close. Give them to me now.
And this is not the only example. Elizabeth Beatty and Denise Wong of the University of Pennsylvania are using the ability of bacteria themselves to turn tiny objects, sort of like living engines, on a micro level now.
Right. Oh, this groundbreaking thing we've been doing for 25 years, right? That's why it's on a mainstream channel, because this is supposed to be setting the narrative for you. This is what we're doing. No, this has been this is probably already in your body. That's how I feel at this point. And it's crazy obvious based on what we have in front of us. Now, this brings us over to the final point about ID 2020, which is this obvious connection to where this is going, that nobody wants to, if this is fake news, even according to Wikipedia, that fantastically accurate site that's always lying for the agenda, right? ID 2020 is a non-governmental organization. By the way, I was being facetious with the outstanding source. If you can't use Wikipedia on a college paper as a citation because they don't let you, then it's not a good source. Then ask yourself why YouTube and the media cite it as the only source. Maybe because it's controllable and the colleges know that. But it says, ID 2020 is a non-governmental organization which advocates for digital ID for the billion undocumented people worldwide and underserved groups like refugees. Oh, that's a nice little veneer. Dakota Gruner is the executive director. The NGO is relatively unknown, of course, before being publicized because of misinformation related to COVID-19 pandemic by conspiracy theorists. Right. That's why. It's not like we've been writing about ID 2020 being tied with vaccine status long before COVID-19 came around, right? But this has been updated to jam it all in with COVID-19 because that's an easy sidestep for people in the mainstream. Oh, it was COVID-19 fake news? Okay, then we all are on board, right? No, ID 2020 has been shown in a very alarming way to be tied with everything this is about before COVID-19 ever got here. And let's get into that to finish off. And by the way, for those people out there trying to constantly misrepresent our opinion about blockchain or anything else, recognize we've been actively talking about the concerns around this topic for a long time, way before COVID-19, by the way, but June 22nd, 2020. ID 2020 Defector speaks on techno-solutionism with immunity passports and the vaccine deception. As I said here, as I shared it, just so it's clear, this is a post from June 2020, right? Just recognize that. And because just because we're willing to entertain a possibility that there are some positive uses for the technology, sort of like the internet being used to fight back against how the internet was meant to be something else, doesn't mean that I believe that's the all-encompassing truth. It means I'm open to the possibility. And should I come to the point to where I feel definitively that's not the case, well, then I'll happily say that. I don't think we're there yet, but I can easily point out that blockchain, cryptocurrency, are actively being used to subjugate you, to put you in a digital gulag. We've always said that. Corbett, any of us. For those out there trying to say that that we're only doing this once, they're the deceivers out there trying to keep a one-sided narrative going, if that's what they're telling you. I'm open to all possibilities, and this is why this is important, guys, because this is happening. To argue that because we consider other possibilities while agreeing with that sentiment makes us dangerous is just, I mean, sure, crash everything. Certainly possible. But let's be smarter than that, right? Only Siths operate in absolutes. How's that? Only Siths. I think it was operate in absolutes. I'm misremembering the quote. Anyway, for those Star Wars fans out there, the point is that absolutists are a problem. People that say, oh, you know what it reminds you of when you hear they're drawing a line in the sand or things like that? What you think about is the government, right? What do authoritarian governments always do? Oh, that's right. You're either with us or against us. Odd how that's the certain sentiment, right? But the point is, this is a great discussion censored by YouTube, like the rest of it, discussing this exactly. Decentralized ID at all costs. Advisor quits ID 2020 over blockchain fixation. So the point is, remember, over here telling you fake news, any connection to COVID-19 is just an utter ridiculous fallacy and it's completely fake. Except it's not. Because an advisor to the ID 2020 Alliance, right? The Alliance is the part of this that crosses over into the vaccine part of this, right? All they want to couch it in is just the original group about specifically the broad refugee part of this. By the way, a digital ID for everyone on the planet is alarming to me anyway. But then you bring it over to the Alliance, which we'll get into, which includes the Bill Gates and everybody else, which aims to bring digital identification to billions of people. This person resigned over the organization's direction on digital immunity passes for COVID-19. Oh, wait a minute. I thought it was fake news, though. Didn't they just say it was fake news? But no, it's not, though, because this is a real story that you could check for yourself. This is CoinDesk. They're telling you, and it's easy to confirm, that she resigned because they were overly focused, one, on blockchain technology version, and two, on ID passports for COVID-19. Not much of a conspiracy, is it, Wikipedia? But it says, in her resignation email Friday, Elizabeth Reneris cited ID 2020's opacity, quote, techno-solutionism, and corporate influence, along with the risk of applying blockchain to immunity passports, right? That's exactly what we talked about. Now, I'm not going to dive into this aggressively deep today. I did an entire show on this before. You could watch it for yourself. It's very obvious this is an alarming direction, right? But it's not just this one part of it. Here, implanted vaccine package ID. Germany's parliament has ratified Gavi's digital agenda ID 2020. Gavi. The global, the global alliance for vaccines and immunization, right? So is it conspiracy theory that it's tied to COVID-19? Obviously not. Is it a conspiracy theory that it's tied to vaccines? No. And we've proven this in past shows. Agenda ID 2020 was designed by Bill Gates as part of the vaccination package. It is backed by the Rockefeller Foundation, Accenture, the WEF, and Gavi. Also, the Gates creation, 2001, Gavi, with HQ in Geneva, Switzerland. Here, in case you want to call something fake news, is directly from German media. This is passed ID 2020 law for Germany. It says has taken a decisive step in the implementation of ID 2020 project by Microsoft and showing the rest of them. The path to becoming a transparent citizen is thus mapped out. The tax identification number is to become a comprehensive citizen number, which enables the authorities to access already existing personal data at another authority. This has Red Brick Coalition in Parliament against the opposition and united resistance against all concerns from privacy advocates decided. Now, I want to see, it, as always, the translation. There's a part here I wanted to read. It looks like it. But anyway, the point is clearly they implement this law. The Microsoft plan, right? Which is, that's the point. That's the Microsoft part of this is the crossover to the vaccine discussion, which is right here, or the next one too. Biometric tracking can ensure billions have immunity against COVID-19. Uh-oh, there's another crossover, must be fake news. That classic Bloomberg fake news, which is quite often. Here's what it says. Even before COVID-19, a variety of companies and nonprofits had been promoting the benefits of digital and biometric IDs. The need for a speedy and comprehensive vaccination campaign has thus emboldened them to the point that privacy and data security campaigners are increasingly discomforted. They're telling you this is, I mean, and it's not a secret. It's been tied to vaccinations. It's been used in the COVID-19 discussion. In May, after the executive director of ID 2020, a sprawling alliance of organizations pushing for digital IDs, wrote a white paper calling for electronic immunity certificates for COVID-19. Oops. The organization itself wrote their own paper calling for immunity certificates for COVID-19. This is one of the group's advisors quit after that happened. And we just told you that because they're talking about blockchain-based. This is right out of the playbook of exactly what they wanted to accomplish. Here's what Nellie Tells points out. How collectively stupid are we? Here's a test. I read this article a while back, thought it was creepy, but just one writer's speculation. Then I saw today the ID 2020. This is on April 20th. ID 2020 lists the article as a resource. Check out what was discussed regarding mandatory digital ID as a year ago. A year ago. Right? This is the point. I'm going to show you the article next. Microsoft, I'll just read you the article. I have it all highlighted. This is just their clip they're showing right here. Microsoft, the ID 2020 Alliance, Universal Digital Identification and You. Last year, Microsoft joined ID 2020, a global alliance whose goal is to create universal digital identities for everyone. What are the social, economic, and ethical implications of such an initiative? Now, remember, the point is, ID 2020 used this article as a resource for what they're talking about. A year before this, they're talking about digital IDs tied in with the vaccination pack. The bottom line is, read it for yourself. It's horrifying. Here's how they finish it. If the alliance's goal is a globally recognized digital identity for everyone from birth to death, that's scary anyway. Will that become a global mandate? How will it be enforced and by whom? What happens to these individuals who are unwilling to participate? Will they be persecuted? And how will the implementation be of identification evolve with technology beyond smartphones? Will wearables, implants like those being used in Swedish subways or some form of digital tattoo become the norm? Gee, that's pretty cognizant, pretty prescient. They're basically talking about everything that came to pass around the discussion of COVID-19. Isn't that telling? This, where was it? February 19th. 2018. Microsoft joins the alliance. And what do you know? The same thing is being worked on today with the same people in regard to a passport for exactly the thing we're dealing with. And they said this years before we got here. Exactly what we would, how is it going to enforce it? How is it going to, are they going to be forced to participate? Will they be prosecuted? Will the implementation of more technology beyond smartphones? Will be wearables? Everything. Why? Because that was always the direction. It says, as more and more transactions become digital in nature and are built around a single global identification standard supported by Microsoft, how would you possibly know that would be the case? The question of who will govern this evolving global community and economy becomes relevant. Who will manage it all? Well, of course, the technocrats, of course. Especially since non-participants in this system would be unable to buy or sell goods or services. 2018. If you're pretending like this doesn't have obvious tie to where we are right this moment, then you're lying to yourself. By the way, this is just the other day, the 12th. Feds explore once in a century bid to remake the... Why is it once in a century? Oh, because COVID-19, of course. Of course, right? We're reimagining it. It's just a happy coincidence. Well, the rise of private cryptocurrencies motivated the Fed to start considering a digital dollar to be used alongside... Of course. And this is a very alarming, dangerous thing. There's plenty of coins out there, Fed coins and different technologies alike, that are being used to subjugate you right this moment. You should be concerned. And this is what they're talking about, right? 2018? Well, of course, when more digital transactions become digital in nature, but well, yeah, exactly. Here we are, all being used under the guise of COVID-19. And as I said, here we are with the universal basic income fake news story that is now coming to pass. That for the podcast, that's quote unquote fake news story. Just as all the quote conspiracy theorists, otherwise known in this context as any researcher smart enough to do basic due diligence, told you was always the plan. Now, of course, some people looked at this and said, Ryan, it's an article from last year. Well, exactly. That was my point, guys. Here we are with this universal basic income fake news story now coming to pass. I didn't say this was new. I'm saying this is now happening, right? I figured other people. Anyway, the point is, even there, people were saying, fake news, you conspiracy theorist, that's not true. And then the next day, breaking news, Shocking, right? Most Americans will start receiving monthly payments from the government on July 15th, right? Was I psychic? No, it's because I'm paying attention, guys. That's why I put that tweet out. Here is where we are. I said, so let's point this out again for all those who called my tweet just days ago on universal basic income conspiracy theory. This is just another example of something many told you was an agenda, yet it was dismissed, and now it's coming to pass. All under a guise of bad guy COVID-19. I'm not even saying, I don't care whether you think it's good or bad or whatever. The point was, a lot of people, myself included, said this was something that was happening. They're clearly implementing this, right? What's his name running for president was probably just to get this in your mind. I'm just, randomly just off the cuff. Who knows? The point is, they said it in your mind. They got you talking about it. That might be good. Then he gave you some stimulus, even though they really screwed everybody while stealing everything else and giving it to their companies they wanted. Here we are, and they're offering it up now, and they know that you're desperate and need it. And the point is, the people who said it would happen were right. The people who said it was fake news were wrong. Again. But to finish it off, remember, Microsoft back in 2020 of April, they have a patent for tracking brain activity to mine cryptocurrency. Right. So here is Microsoft working on this alliance that works with the vaccination discussion in regard to the passport for COVID-19. So whichever part of that you think is the most important is up to you to think about, but it definitely leads to the infrastructure for the passport, right? Which then obviously is going to be tied in with everything else going forward, the social credit, the everything else that can be turned off, like we discussed at the beginning of the show. So you have your UBI, which can be turned off, especially once that's made digital. Right? Just like that, especially once you start spreading fake news that they don't like you saying, right? And Microsoft already has a patent to utilize that infrastructure system to actually help you earn cryptocurrency as long as you take part in their system. This is exactly what some of the people who are misrepresenting our position are saying, and they're right. This is alarming, and this is where it's going. And by the way, I've been saying this long before COVID-19. I wrote an article about it way back, I think it was 2016. About exactly this point, about how blockchain or Bitcoin in that, I think, was the focal point, but blockchain in general, it's simply a question of, I asked the question, is this the new world order coin, or is this our new wave to, or how I framed it, is this the direction to liberation, right? And I made the simple argument, it's about how we go forward, meaning it could be either way. To argue, think about how ignorant it is to argue that the blockchain technology itself, if just left to our own devices, is going to hurt us somehow. The only reason that's going to hurt us somehow is because the government is utilizing that technology to hurt us, right? So to pretend that it's inherently somehow nefarious is to act like blockchain left in your room alone one day is going to hurt you when you wake up the next day, right? That's kind of silly. It's about how bad people utilize it like anything else, which, by the way, by definition, makes it neutral. Now, I'm not even saying that's necessarily 100% the case. I'm just saying, based on the obvious discussion around all this and the obvious realities, it's just technology. So bad people using it against you can hurt you, but good people using any kind of technology can help if they wanted to. I mean, a good analogy someone even threw at me was like nuclear technology. It's like, okay, same. I can make the same analogy. If there's plenty of people that are just completely against nuclear technology, you want my opinion? I would be too if I had a choice. I think there's plenty of other things we could use. But the point is, if that's all you have in front of you, you can use it to do good things. You can use nuclear technology to create power for people. Yeah, and I'm not talking about weapons, you understand? A civilian nuclear program. So you can just see how anything like that, even the extreme, can be utilized in a way to help. I'm just saying I'm open to this possibility. We're staring at them building this gulag around us. That's what this is right here. And unless we can find ways to push back, it's going to get built, guys. That's the reality. They don't have the majority support. I think that's obvious. They're still building it anyway. So if we just say not using it is going to help, maybe it will. But I'm more a man of action. I'd like to do something instead of not do something as an answer, right? But I leave it to all of you to think for yourselves. Now, here's a couple of clips to play that I think is going to be pretty alarming that lead into exactly where this stuff seems to be going. This was discussed a long time ago. Let's get the clip. Share this for you. This is a strange clip.
Two examples. So one is that people eat too much meat, right? And if they were to cut down on their consumption on meat, then they would it would actually really help the planet. But people are not willing to give up meat. Yeah, you know, some people will be willing to, but other people, they may be willing to, but they sort of, they have a weakness of will. They say, wow, this steak is just too juicy. I can't do it. I'm one of those, by the way. So, you know, but so here's the thought, right? So it turns out that we know a lot about, so there, we have these intolerance to, so I, for example, I have milk intolerance. And there, some people are intolerant to crayfish. So possibly we can use human engineering to make it the case that we're intolerant to certain kinds of meat, to certain kinds of bovine proteins. And there's actually analogs of this in life. There's this thing called the long star tick, where if it bites you, you will become allergic to meat. I can sort of describe the mechanism. So
right, because that sounds really normal, right? That sounds like a bioweapon to me. Now, people may scoff at that, and that's probably because they don't understand the history of Lyme disease and ticks and Plum Island and the very obvious reality of how this was a bio program that your government let get out of control, which Dr. Boyle will tell you, the drafter of the Biowarfare Act for the United States government, which they still use. He's open about this stuff, right? It's not a secret. It's very easy to look into. This is why Lyme disease is wildly undiagnosed and basically people find it impossible to define or treat. It's because it's something that we don't understand. The reality that there's another tick that causes you to become allergic to meat, by the way, just so we're aware. Oh, I don't want to restart this. Well, I think I can leave it there. Just real quick. This is from the 2016 World Science Fair. A bioethicist, Matthew Lau, 2016.
That's something that we can do through human engineering. We can kind of possibly address really big world problems.
So through human engineering, which is what they're telling you they're going to do now, which they've already been doing, we can use this concept to create stuff like the idea that we should stop eating meat because they all agree with that. We're going to create something that would make us all allergic to meat. Does that sound like a choice? No, it sounds like a collective action for what they say is the best interest. Is it what they actually think? Who cares? You don't have a choice. 2030, you don't own anything. You've never been happier, right? Who owns everything? If it's 2030 and I own nothing and I've never been happier, somebody must own something. All right, you see where it's going.
Through human engineering. Another. Possibly address really big world problems through human engineering. Another example is, and
you go first.
Yeah. And another example is sort of, and here I'll go first, right? You'll see that I'm the smallest person here, right? And Amy's the smallest person. So it turns out that the larger you are, think of the lifetime sort of greenhouse gas emissions that are required to sort of the energy that's required to transport larger people rather than smaller people, right? But if we're smaller just by 15 centimeters, right, that's a mass, you know, I did the math and it's about mass reduction of 25%, which is huge. And 100 years ago, we're all on the average smaller, about 15 centimeters smaller. Right. So think of just the, you know, like lifetime greenhouse gas emissions if we had smaller children. Right. And so that's something that we could do through some
So not only is he arguing that we can genetically manipulate the human species to make smaller people because that would be better for us, apparently. So they tell us, right? Well, who knows how that would affect, like maybe we could lower greenhouse emissions, but then we irrevocably change the human race on accidentally, right? It's like that's the concept of the mRNA discussion today. So we have this very small justification for why we have a risk, even, and they're blowing it out of proportion, lying about everything, jamming this thing forward that's very clearly dangerous and undefined and not studied properly and is causing problems. And so even if it addresses the risk they're claiming they're trying to use, what about everything else that it's doing for the rest of our lives? You know, this is the concept and this is what they don't care to think about or don't think about at all. Who knows why, but we're staring at the reality in 2016, talking about genetically altering the human species to make us allergic to meat. So we stop the thing that they, you know, you could have a very valid argument is not happening the way that they're saying it is. Does that mean that we're not catastrophically hurting the planet? Not even close. But the politicization of that topic is what I'm talking about. Or small shrink people so it saves the planet. I mean, guys, this is playing God. This is crazy alarming stuff. But this is exactly where this all goes. Here's The Guardian from yesterday. Robots may soon be able to reproduce. Will this change how we think about evolution? What does that remind you of? Oh, I don't know. Altering human evolution in 20 years using nanotechnology puts us right on track, doesn't it? This is, see for yourself. Yesterday, a team of researchers from the UK and the Netherlands are recently demonstrated a fully automated technology to allow physical robots to repeatedly breed, evolving their artificial genetic code over time to better adapt their environment. Arguably, this amounts to artificial evolution. Child robots are created by mixing the digital DNA from two parent robots on a computer. Sounds totally normal, right? The new design is first sent to a 3D printer that fabricates the body of the robot. Then a robot arm attaches a brain loaded with control software inherited from the parents, along with any new components such as sensors, wheels, or joints selected by this evolutionary process. Now, of course, whether we're talking about actual breeding or robots building other robots, sure sounds like a recipe for success, right? It's like every dystopian movie of all time. Like, give the robots the power to build themselves and evolve themselves, because that's going to work out well for a human species, right? I mean, this is a no-brainer, guys. Do you realize how catastrophic the human species is for the planet? How long until an evolving robot species realizes that? I mean, this is kind of a funny, joking comment, but it's not even that funny and not even really a joke. That's crazy. The fact that we're literally talking about, and the evolving part of it, as they said, is the code. Right? So they're evolving their own code. They're learning and building themselves. I mean, this is crazy stuff that's happening right now. And we're acting like the idea of the nanotechnology is totally off the realm of, this is the world they're building. And they're right now evolving. This is why James Corbett talks about the extinction of the human species, because they are actively combining. This is about blending these things, as Schwab is telling you, Klaus Schwab. It goes on to say, a digital replica of every new robot is also created in a computer simulation. This enables a novel type of evolution. New generations can be produced from a union of the most successful traits of a virtual mother and a physical father, combining the benefits of fast but potential unrealistic simulated evolution with the more accurate assessment of robots in a real physical environment. So basically, hive mind, right? Because nobody talks about the hive mind and conspiracy theories in regard to their future, right? Nobody wants that with the meshing of our brain, nanotech smart dust inside of our bodies, right? No, of course not. But the point is they're talking about a hive mind process of these, you know, utilizing all the things they blend together, using the best traits of all the people they have in that hive mind, and using that to constantly better and reproduce the evolutionary stage. So you're exponentially increasing the evolutionary stage of something that's utilizing artificial intelligence to, I mean, it's like, this could be like a week from now, we wake up to a world changed by some evolving robot race. Now, I'm kind of being facetious, but I don't know why that's something we should balk at. Like, that's crazy what they're talking about right here. The new robot, therefore, inherit traits that represent the best of both types of evolution. While this technology can operate without a human in the loop, great. It also allows for collaboration with a human breeder. Just as humans have been selectively breeding crops since the dawn of farming, the robot breeder could influence selection of robots with particular traits. One might even imagine breeding farms producing robots adapted to specific conditions and user requirements. They might be bred for qualities such as battery life or carbon footprint, just as we breed plants for drought resistant or taste. Yeah, how about you realize that that's talking about, you know, who makes these choices? Right? Who's going to be breeding these things? Okay, the government, authority figures. Does that make you feel good? The people that are right now out there destroying other races of people, destroying other cultures, starving entire countries to death because they want things from them, right? I wonder what they're going to breed. I wonder what kind of things they're going to create over time, right? Do we think they're going to make things that will err on the side of all humans, you know, peace and collectivity? No, they're going to err on things that utilize what they want to create. They're going to create the things that achieve their goals, that will help their propaganda, that will help divisiveness and, you know, keeping us looking at each other. That's what this will do. Now I'm thinking very surface level, of course, on what we're currently dealing with. God knows what they will breed into and how they will make these things going forward. And then how they will be utilized into, you know, brought into our lives. This is the future that they're building, and we don't have a say in it, guys. It's happening around you right now. And that's why we already see this, which, by the way, was another story I was called fake news for, which is easy to look up from DARPA, was these, as I've mentioned more than once, detectable airborne pathogen sensors that go on the streets, that go inside buildings or on buses. I've already talked about this, and DARPA's been working on it since the beginning. Here we are. Now it's real world. Too bad we couldn't have done something about it while we knew it was being built, right? County Durham Tech Company secures a $6 million U.S. defense contract to detect airborne pathogens from the Department of Defense. Cromec, based in County Durham, has secured a multi-million dollar contract following from earlier work with DARPA. The contract will see the company develop biological threat detection systems that identify airborne pathogens from its base, at the Net Park Technology Park. So, get ready for your airborne pathogen sensors coming to a town near you, on the street corners, right? Imagine a year from now, 10 years from now, next month, suddenly we've got an infrastructure of biosensors that all lead back to one central hub that can then set off things. And all of a sudden you're walking down the street and all of a sudden the sensor alarms start going off. Uh-oh, everybody knows what to do. Go lock down, get your masks, everybody go into place, lock down, because suddenly we have an alarm sensor that we think might represent a new outbreak. That's where this is going. This is the biosecurity state. And guess what? They'll pass legislation that says you don't have a right. If the alarm goes off, you have to go to your place. Now, I'm just making this stuff up, but this is a logical conclusion about where we see these things going. And this is what they already told you this would be. So why would they have sensors if they weren't going to be used to justify action? This is your new world. And as I end with here, to recognize that anybody that is standing up like myself or anywhere coming out and saying, guys, this is dangerous. What you're doing there is wrong. You're violating my rights. You're forcing this on people and you should be charged with a crime. They are going to build the context, which they already are, for why every single one of these people, myself included, are not just wrong, dangerous, terrorists. Now, Whitney wrote a recent article about this, and the Biden's new war on domestic terrorism actively includes COVID-19 references and actively discusses the concept of anybody simply challenging government direction. So now, if I stand up and go, I disagree with your policy, they'll claim my disagreement is creating terrorism over here, therefore I'm a terrorist. That is not even a minced word. That is exactly what they're arguing. So the very next day we see this come out. Now, I could have been jumping the gun. Maybe this isn't the exact beginning, but the BBC, The Guardian actually reports. So don't you love when the media reports on the media? Isn't that great? BBC tightened security after anti-vaxxer death threats to the staff. Exactly. Now, just like a beginning of the Comet Pizza discussion, you're going to have people claiming that the anti-vaxxers are threatening people's lives. Therefore, if you are an anti-vaxxer, which I'm not, which is what they'll claim I am simply because I'm arguing there's things to be concerned about. But that doesn't matter. The context doesn't matter. The nuance doesn't matter. I am because they say I am. Therefore, I'm a terrorist. That is where this goes. Just like people who were arguing back in the day that maybe the Iraq war wasn't a good thing to do. Uh-oh, he's a terrorist supporter. That's where, I mean, we all remember it. He's an Assad apologist. He's supporting terrorism. Remember? It's the same old tired government effort. As I said, so begins the entirely predictable war on COVID anti-vaxxer terrorists. Irrational action proposed in order to deal with manufactured irrational fear. This is the modus operandi of these governments. Problem, reaction, solution. It's all there. As always, it just depends on whether you are paying attention, whether you're willing to pay attention. Thank you for being here. Thank you for always asking questions, having the courage to stand up in a time when it's never been more difficult to do so. It takes a lot. Your family, people around you, just know that you're not alone and more people than you realize are with you. In fact, the majority of the country are with you. And this is what's hard to see. When you feel you're in that corner with your family and your work and everybody saying you're crazy, don't forget that 55% of the country is currently on your side right now. You're not alone. They just keep that from your view. Keep pushing, keep fighting. I love you. As always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant. And I wanted to add before I finish with this clip again, just because I want to make the point. I forget to add this sometimes, but this last clip, the music is from Sevad, S-E-V-A-D, called Nobody Cares. Very spot on. Support his work. A great musician out there fighting for truth with his music. CVAD, S-E-V-A-D. Nobody cares. I love you all. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Struggles we bear, beg you listen, my claim. See the struggles we bear, nobody don't care. I'm stuck in my house,
no kind of fear. What the hell are you doing to this woman?
Oh, you are
nobody don't care.
This is disgusting. What are you doing? What are these poor women doing?
Turn on my TV, everybody is fighting, they're fighting. Can't you see that they're fighting, they're fighting? They're afraid of the whole of us, soul of us. Can't you see that they're fighting, they're fighting? Cause they don't wanna see us living together. They prefer seeing us canceling each other. They wanna see us die, don't wanna see us try. Fear-mongering that is trending. 1984, them defending. Global reset, a new life pending. Better wake up and stop from sleeping. Remember the FEMA campus, they're waiting. Don't know what I take them indoctrination. No re-education, no depopulation.
Everything I've seen in the last 9 days, all the things that just don't make sense, the patients I'm seeing in front of me, the lungs I'm trying to improve, have led me to believe that COVID-19 is not this disease, and that we are operating under a medical paradigm that is untrue.
It's time to unite, get up and fight. Oh, it's time to unite. Yes, it's time to fight. Revolution will be televised. In no time, if I go with one of I. Now I each now waste no time. Chinese now get left behind. Never move to the right to the right.
Where's the grave concern if you're going to be injected with these same proteins? Not a single, to my knowledge, not a single vaccine manufacturer took heed of my warning to remove those unsafe epitopes from the vaccines before they formulated their vaccines, in spite of being emailed.
Hold on a minute, don't take her away! Daddy, don't take her away! Don't take her away, you bastard!
If you stand for nothing, you fall for everything. It's the message.